following program is brought to you by your friends at Podcast One.
First, 8sleep.com. Every podcast has mattress ads, sure, but there's thousands of them. But the only one out there that uses technology and temperature to give you the deepest sleep is 8sleep. The pod by 8sleep. First bed to combine dynamic temperature regulation and sleep tracking. Oh, God, I could have had a decent childhood if I had one of these when I was young. All I did was sweat and toss and turn. Now I have 8sleep. Research shows the link between sleep performance and temperature. Of course, you don't need to research that. We all know it. The pod reacts in real time, adjusting the temp to keep you comfortable. The stats say it all. Pod customers fall asleep faster, toss and turn 25% less, and have a 17% increase in deep sleep. You're worth it. Sleep hygiene, super important right now. $150 off plus free shipping at 8sleep.com/M. That's E-I-G-H-T sleep.com/Adam.
Hello and welcome to Corolla Classics for November 16th, 2019. The show, we're going to highlight some of the greatest moments of the Adam Carolla Show. My name's Chris Loxamon, executive producer of ACS. And with me, as always, Carolla archivist, superfan Giovanni.
Hey, everybody.
And hey to you, Gio. I'm excited. We got a very musical show today, and I'll explain in just a moment. This first clip that we have is a request from Chris, and he writes, I know you just had Adam and Norm breaking down Kenny Rogers songs, very classic stuff, but if you could, I'd love to hear the full breakdown of The Coward of the County with Brian Posehn. That whole interview was great. I bet it was about 5 years ago. Thanks and have a great day, Chris. Yeah, I mean, look, everybody loves when Adam breaks down anything Kenny Rogers, so this time he does it with Brian Posehn.
And there's a little bit more of this coming tomorrow. Not this episode, but more Kenny Rogers in a different riff. So tune into Corolla Classics in the separate feed if you want to hear that tomorrow. Until then, Adam Carolla Show 384, Brian Posehn, Teresa Strasser, and Brian Bishop, August 2010. So it was close, about 9 years ago. This is them breaking down some Kenny Rogers, and it goes a little something like this.
Yeah, I guess they do. I would have liked Coward of the County or Lucille.
Ruby.
Ruby. I mean, yeah. Don't Take Your Love to Town.
That's next.
Have you ever really broken down the lyrics to Ruby, Don't Take Your Love to Town?
Well, she's a whore, right?
Well, not really by trade, but she has to because she's a young woman and she has needs that aren't being satisfied by him because he was broken down in Korea, I believe. He was at left bent and twisted by
depressing.
This Asiatic war. Do you have that song, Brian? If you really listen to the lyrics here, it's quite a... It starts
you
off.
Painted up your lips and rolled and curled your tinted hair.
Yeah, she's horned herself up.
That quick.
He's good.
Amazing.
He's good.
Ruby, are you contemplating?
And to be fair, this is not the first time we've broken down the song.
Yeah.
This song? Oh, okay.
All right, so she put the curlers on and painted up her face.
Right.
The sun is going down.
Now it's getting dark and she's heading into town. So far, you know, so good. It's all right.
Yeah, not a total bummer yet.
Yeah, maybe there's a nice Trader Joe's or something.
Right.
Yeah, bingo night.
Yeah, you never know why she's going to town. But now we find out.
To take her love to town.
Didn't start that crazy Asian war. But I was proud to go into my patriotic chore.
He got drafted and he went.
He's proud, yeah.
He's proud.
And yes, it's true that I'm not the man I used to be.
To me, that means he can't perform.
Right.
Yeah.
He can't satisfy his younger wife.
He
took grenades. You know, he's not what he was, but he still needs
some company.
Still needs some company.
Right.
It's a good man. Patriot.
It's hard to love a man whose legs are bent and paralyzed.
Oh, okay.
Bent and paralyzed.
Ugh.
Yeah.
And the wants and the needs of a woman your age, Ruby, I realize.
Basically, can't fuck his old lady anymore because he's bent.
but it's a nice way to say it. I've heard them say
until I'm not around. I like this part. It's not long till he's dead.
Yeah. Everybody's counting the days.
Right. It's quietly one of the most depressing ditties in the world.
When old Cripple Legs are our nation's hero.
Yeah. Take your love. He's basically begging his young wife not to go fuck some strangers in town.
That's awful. Because I just heard the slamming
of the door. Oh, she's splitting. Turns out he has another side to him, too. Oh, yeah, I know I've heard it slam 100 times before. She does a lot, and that was just this week, so she does a lot of fucking in town. And if I could move, I'd get my gun and put her in the ground. He put her in the ground if he could move. He can't move.
Lucky for her.
Yeah. She wanted her company.
I know. Do you want to hang around with a guy who want to put you in the ground?
Maybe that's why she takes her love to town.
Take your love to town.
Yeah, I'd move my love into town, too, if I was going to be put in the ground.
And I love that the song is so cheery sounding, too.
Yeah, it's like, hey. Yeah, it sounds like a Cialis commercial.
Yeah, you kind of want the backup vocals to go, wait, what did you say? You're going to fucking shoot her?
Wait, those old guys.
No, we didn't sign up for this.
Those old guys in the Viagra commercial get together and play in the band all weekend. Yeah. This is all they're playing in the band.
Well, it's true. They can't get a boner. They got to go into their wife's got to go town and fuck.
You guys want to play Ruby again?
It's an upbeat ditty about a paralyzed guy whose wife is a whore.
Yeah. It'd be weird when the guy who just did the drum track for it, the session musician who laid it down months earlier, that's for a Kenny Rogers song. He probably thought it was another, you know, a foot snapper and a toe tapper, and then he heard this about the guy who was bent and paralyzed. Right.
And his dad actually is like that.
Yeah.
So then his dad thinks that...
Oh, he's singing about him?
Yeah. Gosh.
Then he gets into some trouble at home. Speaking of, just a session drummer.
Yeah.
He's like, I didn't write that.
But you know, I
but
stepped on a
landmine family story.
In Korea.
And your mother's a whore now.
Yeah. Well, there is... It's funny you bring that up. Do you have a coward of the county?
No, I can find
that. All right. We'll work on that.
Yeah, that one's a bummer too, right?
Well, not only that, but, you know, she's gang raped by the Gatlin brothers.
Oh,
when
I
does that happen?
About that.
That happens in the lyrics?
Well, the thing that's nutty about the Coward of the County...
And Lucille's a bummer, too, like, right?
Every song he quietly sings, except for Islands in the Stream, is a bummer.
Wait, what happens in Lucille?
There's some grief going on, I can't remember.
Yeah. Coward of the
County. Doesn't end with her dead or...
Never stood one single
time. No,
and Lucille's got 18 kids or something.
Yeah,
like,
it's already kind of.
You gotta work the lyrics out to Lucille. Yeah, it's just called him Yella. Yella. That was kind of like Posehn's growing up, right? No dad. Everyone thought you were the coward of the
yellow
county.
Yeah, sure.
Well, at least reddish.
Yeah.
Reddish Yella.
Yeah.
His daddy died in prison. I mean, your dad wasn't in the joint. Because he wasn't my brother's son. Nine. Oh, so he's the uncle. I still recall the final words my brother said to Tommy.
Son, my life is over, but yours has just begun. Promise me, son.
So,
right before the chorus.
The dad, the dad died in the joint. By the way, I didn't fuck with kids whose dad died in the joint.
Right.
That was my policy
in
terms of picking on people. I feel like it's a pretty scrappy kid who's seen a lot.
Yeah.
Dad probably taught him how to make a shank.
Yeah.
I see the guy with the teardrop tattoo next to the teardrop tattoo, which means your dad died in prison. I don't fuck with that kid, but evidently the Gatlin brothers didn't get that message. Tommy's love was Becky. He loved Becky. In her arms he didn't have to prove he was a man. She loved him for who he was.
Exactly. She didn't care about his dad died.
Gatlin boys came calling. Gatlin boys came a calling. They took turns
at Becky. Ugh. Wait.
There were three of them.
Ooh.
They took turns at Becky. There were three of them. Tommy opened
up the door. Did they get multiple turns? It's sort of implying.
Now, who's Becky? Torn
dress.
The guy that he loved.
I can't follow
this. The only girl that...
The only girl he loved was Becky.
And loved him back, yeah.
Yeah, she...
That's the guy's dad died in prison.
She liked him for what he was.
Yeah.
Okay.
Everyone else knew he was Yeller.
Right, right, okay.
And evidently a pussy.
Okay.
Right. Becky saw him for what he was, and she loved it.
And then these Gatling brothers came along
they came
and had at her.
They had at her.
They each took turns.
They each took turns, and there were three. And when he stopped, he goes, And there were three of them.
Wow.
Gross. And the best part about this whole story is when I interviewed Kenny Rogers was a motorcycle racer from the 70s. Kenny Rogers, I said, there was an act called the Gatlin Brothers that were pretty famous around your time. He's like, yeah, I know. I toured with them many years. I'm like,
were they rapists?
How many Gatlin Brothers were there? He's like, there were three of them.
There were three of them.
So when you talked about the gang rapist named the Gatlin Brothers, when there was three of them, and you were touring with the Gatlin Brothers, didn't you pause and go, should make it the Johnson Brothers and make it four of them? Or make it the Baldwin Brothers and make it six of them? Like,
right.
Why the guys? He's like, yeah. Well, there you go. And there he started laughing, and I was like,
I did a shout out for you on my new song.
To song.
Got name check.
Who likes gang rape? You guys, listen to this. Yeah. I got a great shout out for you, Gatlin Brothers. This next one's like the Gatlin Brothers. Hey, who's in the gang rape? Hold a lighter over your head. All right, awesome. Yeah. All right. This next song is not about consensual sex. All right. So the Gatlin Brothers, when there's three Gatlin Brothers in real life, and there's three of them who raped Becky.
Mm-hmm. There were three of them.
Back in.
Tommy opened up the door, saw his Becky crying. The torn dress, the shattered look was more than he could stand.
So as soon as he was done beating off, he
took down his daddy's picture.
Well, he doesn't have crippled legs to stop it, right?
But his dad had already told him not to do what he had done.
Yeah, they saw the picture.
So is his dad in jail for messing up some dudes?
I'm guessing it wasn't tax evasion. Rarely a topic touched upon in the country world, you know?
Yeah, it wasn't white collar crime.
Well, what really rhymes with deduction?
Right.
Embezzle is top.
Yeah, it's a tough one too. Yeah.
Son, you don't have to buy to be a man.
He was $10.99 by his former employer in the previous tax quarter. He didn't claim enough dependents. Yeah, it's wordy, you know.
What rhymes with racketeering?
Yeah, better just put a man in the ground. Safer. Safer rhymes, faster too.
Into the bar room.
Uh-oh.
One of them got up, met him halfway across the floor.
Still in his refractory period.
Tommy turned around and said, hey, look, old Yella's leaving. But you could have heard a pin drop when Tommy stopped and locked the door.
Oh, he locked the door. Yeah, it's the baddest ass move in the world. The baddest ass move in the world. Is putting the closed sign.
Yeah.
That means you're giving, you know,
no world, one's leaving.
You're giving a world class ass kicking. You lock the door. Although, I would argue if I owned the tavern, I'd be like, hey, man.
We're still up. I'm trying to do business.
Tourists are coming in with a Heineken on tap.
This is kind of my busy night.
Yeah.
Yeah, you guys can fight, but you don't have to, you know.
Just take it
to sell some beers.
Yeah, really. We make most of our money from the bar.
I do have bills to pay.
Yeah.
If you administer ass beating, people are going to drink some beers. So why close the doors?
Posehn's doing two shows here on Friday and one show Thursday night. So if we could go ahead and reopen that door, that'd be awesome. All right, sorry.
20 years of crawling. Bottled up inside him.
Yeah, he's got a lot of ass whooping to give.
He wasn't holding nothing back. He let him have it all. Tommy left the bar room. Not a Gatlin boy was standing. He said, this one's for Becky. As he watched the last one fall, I heard him say, I promised you, Dad, not to do the things you've done. I'll walk away from trouble when I can.
Maybe Dad beat the shit out of Gatlin Sr.
But yeah, the other thing is, a sign of a badass, when somebody starts talking to themselves after they just kick your ass, that's frightening.
Yeah, talking to their dead dad.
Or talking to Jesus or whoever they're talking to. That's just bad news.
They should be talking to the police, but anyone else, you got problems, Yeah, so there you go. He was a coward in the county. And there's a very valuable lesson in this.
What is it?
Don't mess with...
Yeah, don't fuck with that guy because
don't
after
mess with the guy
Gatlin
whose dad is in prison.
Brothers gang rape, you're Becky, then you're going to beat everyone into a coma in a tavern. I mean, it's, again, it's an uplifting message.
Don't taunt the guy whose wife you just raped, too. Like, hey, Oyella's leaving.
Oh, that's the lesson.
Yeah.
They do a lot of that in movies.
The taunting after the raping is really the cherry on the horrible sundae.
Yeah, it's one thing to gang rape your girl.
Yeah.
But then call you yellow on top of it?
Yeah.
During your refractory?
He drew his line, yeah.
Yeah. And
he
again,
just went to talk to those fellas. He just went to say...
To straighten them out.
Yeah.
Don't do that again. Don't rape my wife again.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's not cool.
Yeah.
But then calling him yellow.
Right, right. That's what did it. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, or give me a heads up when you're going to rape her so I can put a raping dress on. Because this one's all torn and covered with goo.
Right.
You know what I mean? And that was an expensive dress.
Right.
You know, I got my, you know, T, I don't want to get gross here, but you have your period underpants, right?
Oh, yeah.
So you have your raping dress.
Right. You don't mind if a little blood gets on it.
A guy has a work t-shirt. He uses it when he's going to change the oil.
What girl doesn't have a raping dress?
Well, when you're going to change your oil in your car, you don't put on a tuxedo.
Yeah, no, exactly.
You put a tux on?
I'll put on a free, like, comedy club t-shirt or something. Yeah, yeah.
Right. Yeah, you put on
a... I'm sure you would have a raping outfit, too.
Yeah.
You know, you're going to get dirtied up.
Yeah. Oh, no, we have an outfit for raping.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Same shirt that I wear to change my car oil.
Yeah.
I put my Tampa Improv shirt
on. Elastic waist pants.
And go out and rape.
Yeah.
Right.
And to me, it's whatever I saw Patton Oswalt wearing last. Because, you know, I have a feeling.
Why are you going after Patton today?
No, he's a good guy. When the lineup hits, you know what I mean?
Okay.
I'm
going to go, hey.
But nobody's going to ever mistake you for him.
Yeah.
You know what? But I feel like they go into a blackout thing, and they go, right. I think the guy was funny. I saw him on cable. He did a kind of serious movie that people enjoyed, but nobody watched. Well, there you go. It's Patton Oswalt right there, buddy. Right. You're talking about the man, are you not?
I would just be interested in Kenny's writing process. Like, when you sit down, do you first get the melody?
Yeah.
Or do you first think about, like, a life situation that shouldn't lend itself to songs?
It's got
to
be weird for the guy who collaborates with Kenny, because the guy probably writes the music.
I just wrote this cool
little
ditty.
Now, you go write a song about bucking off a horse or a picnic or something like that.
Right.
Like, I got one about gang raping. And it's like, what? No. This is going to be a little toe tapper. Remember? This is going to be like for hay rides and shit like that. Come on, Kenny. Yeah, I got one about a guy's legs were bent and twisted in the Korean War. It's going to be awesome. Yeah, it's got to be weird because, you know, there's some guy who probably lays down the lick and then gives it to Kenny, and then Kenny does the lyrics. And again, one of these days, if we can book them, we'll get the Gatlin brothers in here and see what they have to say about being a serial rapist.
Yeah, it was great. He threw us into a song, but then when we heard the song...
Yeah.
Good news and bad news.
Yeah.
Our manager told us Kenny wrote us into something.
Yeah.
Kenny was a good buddy up until that point.
Yeah. Like, you know, when someone writes a book and they thank their wife, this is kind of the opposite of... Right. This would be the opposite of that. Yeah. Until next time, this is Adam Carolla. For Ball Brian, Brian Posehn, and Teresa Strasser saying mahalo.
And now, Stitcher Radio presents your Adam Carolla Extra.
Yeah, time for a little extra content. Getting an assist from my good buddy Brian.
Yo.
Always good to have you back.
Well, I'm stuck here because President Obama is in town. And he's doing a fundraiser, apparently, in my neighborhood. And they've stopped traffic on all the major streets. They're all just... My wife just texted me a picture, and the people are stopped, like, on our side streets. Like, they can't even get through.
Yeah. Let me say this. I've complained about this before. And listen, asswipes, don't explain to me the nuances of politicking. Where and how does it work where you get to go out not at the halfway point of your own campaign? And I was shouting about this when he did The View a few weeks ago, and start going out and either campaigning for yourself or somebody else. Get the fuck to work. You're the goddamn president. You have arguably the most important job on the planet. Certainly top three.
Yes.
Other than being a parent.
Oh,
that's why I'm paying a Mexican lady to do it while I'm here.
So she has the most important job.
The point is this. You have, let's just put it this way. You have the most important job in this country. How about you hang in the office and get some work done? And don't give me this fucking, you're just a Barack hater. I'd say this to every president every time. They're going on vacation, and I don't mind a vacation. But the fundraising and the campaigning for other fucking politicians, and by the way, ones that you probably don't even know or necessarily like, they just happen to be in your party, knock it the fuck off. Yeah. I mean, who's he raising money for this time?
I guess I have no idea, but it's obviously probably a Democratic candidate, right? Somewhere here in a
right
congressional race.
Well, here's who we have. We have Barbara Boxer over here, who's horrific. We have Dianne Feinstein, who's probably worse than she is. And then that only leaves Schwarzenegger and V. Retardo. All of them are fucking not worthy of raising a fucking penny for. I wouldn't take what was in my fucking ashtray, or even Dawson's, which has nothing but roach clips in it, and give it to those fucking idiots. By the way, here's all you need to know. California better before these fucking charlatans got to town, or worse? Obviously, it's worse. The place is a dump. Barack needs to go the fuck back to the Oval Office and get some shit done.
Yeah, it's the vacation, you're right. Don't mind. They've got Camp David and designated places for that. But the interruption of daily life for millions, and maybe the busiest intersections in the United States.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, these are major
and who the
traffic
fuck,
time, too.
And just make a phone call. How about you Skype him in? Does that work with black people?
No.
Okay.
They're always late.
Did not know that. No, not. I just meant, I didn't know if it's a black and white technology and it didn't show up or
here
something.
Here I am being racist.
Oh.
Damn it.
They're always late. All right, so they're on rapper time.
That's right.
I wonder if Brock's on rapper time, too. Either way, whoever you are, whatever side of the aisle you're on, let's go ahead and get to the halfway point of your contract. You have a four-year contract. You've decided to start shopping around deals for other teams like you're a fucking free agent.
You have a no-trade clause.
19 months into your 48-month contract. Let's get busy. And stop working for other players on other teams and other contracts just because you're both lefties. Fuck that. Get back to the fucking Oval Office and get busy. And how can we never say anything about it? It's like, oh, Barack Obama made a campaign stop. He's swinging by California to do a fundraiser. It's $5,000 a plate for Dianne Feinstein. Get the fuck back to Washington and get the fuck to work. Or do we not have crime, poverty, is everyone employed? What's going on? And let me say this, too. How much difference do these guys make? Remember, we're all bracing ourselves for the big change. What was the big change that came in? Remember, it was time for change.
Yeah.
Getting a big change.
Right, big
prepare
change.
For change. Yeah. Hope and change. Hope and change.
Right.
Maybe they meant like change.
That's all that's left in my pocket.
Hope and a little change.
A little bit of change.
All right, anyway, you can sleep here tonight, Bald Brian.
I might. How long do these things usually go, this extra content? Two questions. How long are they supposed to go? How long do you make them?
We far exceeded our allotment of time already.
That was your Adam Carolla Extra on Stitcher Radio.
All right, Manscaped, supporter of the Adam Carolla Show. And these guys do support us, and it comes from Manscaped. Best in men's below-the-belt grooming, precision-engineered tools for the family jewels. Tis the season of Manscaped, everyone. It's a great gift. Perfect package 2.0. Comes with the lawnmower 2.0 electric trimmer. Waterproof for the shower. Skin-safe technologies. Not going to nick or snag the family jewels down there. Also includes a crop preserver, anti-chafing, ball deodorant, and moisturizer as well. And a pair of Manscaped high-performance anti-chafing boxer briefs as well. Keeps the junk fresh and keeps it where it belongs all day, every day. Get 20% off plus free shipping with the code ACS at manscaped.com. Your balls are going to thank you, right, Dawson?
Get 20% off and free shipping with the code ACS at manscaped.com. That's 20% off with free shipping at manscaped.com. Use code ACS. Clean up your nuts and make Santa proud this year.
And that was Adam, along with the great Brian Posehn, breaking down Coward of the County by Kenny Rogers. Thank you for
that.
That's
a ruby.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. A little touch of ruby, too. Thanks for that request, Chris. And if anybody else would like to submit a listener request, email us, classics@adamcarolla.com. Find us at Instagram. I'm Chris Loxamana1, and Gio is Giovanni Giorgio. We're also on Twitter, Facebook, everything. So hit us up. Let us know what you want to hear. Now, our next clip, which features one of Adam's favorite musicians, like
all-time favorites.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Graham Parker.
Yeah, this was around the time I think he was promoting This Is 40, because he was involved in the soundtrack, if I'm not mistaken.
That's right.
Adam Carolla Show 943 with Alison Rose and Brian Bishop. It's from October 2012. He's making his ACS debut. He's a delight. He comes in. It's magic right off the bat. Adam loves everything he does, and they have a hilarious and fun little conversation. And it goes something like this.
Graham Parker in studio records Good Name of the New Elm, available November 19th. Pre-order, by the way. Do it through Amazon. Go through our website, click on the banner, and pow, show us a little love, Graham. So nice of you to come in.
Well, thank you for having me. Appreciate it.
I'm looking at something here that it just struck me. I'm going to interview Judd Apatow next week, and Judd said, go see my movie first, and tomorrow I'm going to go down to Universal and see a pre-screening of his movie, which is called This is 40, and now I'm looking down here, and here's Graham Parker in the Judd Apatow film, This is 40. So this is what you call serendipity for me. How'd you get involved with that?
Well, Judd... one of I think Jonathan Karp, who's a music supervisor, works for Judd a lot, got hold of my publishing company who administrate my catalog and said Judd would like to talk to Graham. So I said, give him the email address. Judd got hold of me. I said, give me a time and place, I will be there. And I met up with him, and you know, he sort of outlined this movie that he was, you know, in the works. He was writing it, sort of a follow up of Knocked Up. Mm-hmm. But it involves Pete and Debbie, Paul mm-hmm. Rudd and Leslie Mann.
Right.
Not the Seth Rogen thing.
Right. Leslie Mann is his wife
exactly.
in real life?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. So, and Paul Rudd, his character is Pete, is starting an indie label, and he wants to sign what he would call real music, because in Knocked Up, he was working for like a major label.
Right.
And didn't seem very happy with it. So, 70s and 80s music, and I might be one of those kind of acts that he would sign to his indie uh-huh. label, you see. And so Judd's talking with me, and you know, I said, well, guess what, I've just reformed the Rumor, and we're going to do an album in about a month and a half's time. And I said, you should get the Rumor in there as well.
Right.
So then I broke into a really bad Sammy Davis impersonation, and because he asked me, can you
got a shot of it, can you do a little of it?
Have I played this room before? Because you cats are cool. And I mean that. Pachow, pachow, pachow. So Judd said, you're hired. You know, well, actually, he looked at me like I was insane.
Well, he was probably a fan of yours, right?
He was a fan. He'd used one of my songs in the last episode of Undeclared, and that's how I got hip to that show, and Freaks and Geeks, you know. And he's a fan of many, many artists and different types of music. And so... you know, he sort of thought maybe I could fit in with this and be an actor, acting as myself. And so he got back to me a week later and said, okay, I want you in the movie acting as yourself, and I want a two-day shoot with the Rumor. And also, I just saw you on the Craig Kilborn show on YouTube with this with a guy playing upright bass. Can we get him and do a duo thing? So I've got two musical performances with the Rumor. We did a two-day shoot in the Belasco Theater, downtown L.A. I'm acting in it,
mm-hmm.
quote unquote, and a duo performance and songs.
Have you seen it? Do you know?
I've seen a screening. Yeah.
Oh, they didn't cut you out.
I was astonished.
Cut you out.
I know. I've been on tenterhooks the whole time, thinking Universal would come up to Judd and say, you know, this Brian Parker,
guy, right?
He's not good.
Nobody's, and the Rounders need to go too.
Nobody's heard of him. You know, mm-hmm. bring somebody in that people have heard of. But Judd floats his own boat, man. You know, I mean,
that's what I love about
that's
the Judd
exactly. It. I told him today because I was on a panel with him for Billboard. You know, I think it's admirable that It's not just about trendy new acts or superstars. It's about what he liked. You know, Loudon Wainwright's music was, right, you know, all over Knocked Up. And so he has convictions and the courage to back them up, and nobody's messing with him, you know.
Well, I'll talk to Judd in a couple of days and tell him you said he did a fair to Midland job directing him.
Yeah, I would, yeah.
But I want to talk about you. I don't want to put any words in your mouth, but I always felt like 79 and 80 was some of the most exciting time for music, at least for me, because I think about Joe Jackson's first two albums, Look Sharp and I'm the Man, and you with Up Escalator and Squeezing Out Sparks and stuff, yeah, like that. And it seemed like in the Pretenders and all these bands doing just some great, great stuff. And then somehow around the mid-80s, the synthesizer started to kick, mm-hmm, in, and it took a synsonic drum started kicking in, and it took a step, you know. And I guess in any art, fashion, music, anything, architecture, there's some good years, and then there's some years you look back on and go, eh. Yeah. But growing up in England and being on the scene in the mid-70s going into the late 70s and early 80s, it must have been a really exciting time.
Well, a lot of people kind of always say, oh, you came along at the same time as, et cetera, fill in the names, you know. And I actually sort of broke into the music business in 1975 when I met a guy who loved my work and became my manager, and I had a demo played on a radio show, obscure London radio show, and instantly got a record deal from nowhere. I didn't have all this background of playing and gigs and all this. That wasn't really me. And so my first album came out in 76, Howling Wind.
Right.
And then Heat Treatment the same year. And
I own them both.
You own them both. You see, that year was kind of, it was a no man's land. It was still prog rock rule. There wasn't this punk and new wave. But it exploded, you know, 77 with the Sex Pistols, of course, in England. And the Ramones were around in 76,
sure,
and television. But they hadn't impinged on the consciousness of the public.
But so, your stuff changed like, sorry, I got to geek out a little bit here.
Geek out. Oh,
but like Heat Treatment had a lot of horns in it.
Yeah.
It was very,
yeah,
soulful. And it sounded like it was like tip of the cap to the 60s or something. And then 2 years later, you're,
yeah,
doing something called New Wave, which I like more, even for some unknown reason. I don't know why.
That's good. Yeah.
I love horns and stuff, but I,
yeah,
mean, you're doing a totally different sound 2.5 years later.
Well, yeah, Squeezing Out Sparks. I'd done three albums. Third one was Stick to Me, and there were horns on all of those records. Those first three.
Yep.
And it's enough already. You know, it's time to do something different. And I just wrote a bunch of songs, as I've always been doing, not really thinking much about it. But I think I was kicked into making some kind of change in what I was doing because of all those other new artists that were appearing. And, you know, you don't want to be in danger of being thought of as some kind of good time bar band, which is what people kind of talk. They mention me in those terms, and I'm like, they're missing the songs. They're hearing the horns. They're missing the songs. So I think Squeezing Out Sparks, I wanted to clear that deck and come up with something, you know, very different. And,
Were you – I was always – I'm just living in North Hollywood at this point in a garage, and I'm just reading the album. Like when you just read the album, you know, and like – but it was described – you're always sort of described as angry,
yeah,
like edgy, angry, you know, writing lyrics that'll take your heart by the lapels and shake it senselessly. And things like that. At least that's what's said on the back of one of the records.
That sounds right. Yeah.
But were you angry?
Well,
and what were you angry about?
You know, two years before I got my first record deal, I was a hippie like everyone else, or not like everyone else, but I was traveling around to going to Morocco and doing all that stuff, you know. But I came out the end of that and started to feel a lot of something was, you know, sort of pinging away in my head about the music I used to like when I was 15 and 16. And we're talking soul music, basically, American soul music, and mm-hmm, Jamaican ska was a kind of underground scene in England. And also, you know, something that the intensity of the Stones and the Beatles, this was coming back to me instead of the more flowing psychedelic prog rock thing, which I thought was already dead. It was flatulent and, you know, self-congratulatory by mm-hmm, 1973, 74. So I got this intensity that came into me. I don't know why. I'd had a pretty decent life, but, you know, this anger came.
And where did you grow up? I like that.
I grew up, I was born in London, and when I was four, my parents moved to a village called Deepcut, that's one word, in Surrey.
Wow.
And so I would get out of my house, walk about 30 seconds and be in the woods, gone, vanished. That was the life I had. And surrounding Deepcut were provincial towns like Woking and Aldershot, the home of the British Army, and Guildford, very middle-class stockbroker belt.
Where's Chichester in this
Chichester, whole mix? Chichester, my aunties in Chichester. I spent many Christmases there. I had relatives in Chichester in Sussex. So I'm not far away from there. You know, it was a short drive. It seemed like a long drive in those days, but
sure.
The cars were, you know, sort of ancient. But so that was my upbringing, which is pretty darn nice. But I was a tyke. We were all like monsters, the kids.
You where know, we were horrible. What did your parents do?
My dad, after the war, he was a wood machinist, and that kind of died in London. You know, that work kind of died away. I guess they were getting more mechanized.
Mm-hmm.
And so they moved to Deepcut, this village, and he got a job stoking the boilers of a hospital. So he'd be doing night shifts with these row of boilers. It was really gothic.
Yeah.
And hauling the coal in there.
Oh, God.
Unbelievable. And
Mary Poppins.
Yeah.
It really was, yeah. And, you know, I'd sit with him sometimes and, you know, with his pint mug of tea and his roll-ups that looked like Peter Tosh joints. They were
right.
Huge. And as I like to say, he died at the age of 89 of a bizarre cigarette-smoking accident, you know. and coal dust as well, you know.
Sure.
So he
but he made it to 89.
Guy. Yeah, he did.
And so for you, I was just watching you and the rumor from 1980 playing, I don't know, Blaupunkfest in Germany.
Yes, the whatever, the Rock Palace.
I want to see a little of that if we can do it. But that is, I don't know, 5,000 seats, 8,000 seats. I don't know. It's a big venue.
Yeah.
So all of a sudden, you're traveling around, you're gypsy, and you're coming out with some albums and all stuff. And then all of a sudden, you're on the radio. And you're playing these massive venues, and you're traveling all over the place. Were you ready for it? You're still young at this point. You're 29, 30, something
well,
like that?
Yeah, to be honest, my career was in steps. You know, it wasn't – it was an explosion of press interest, but the public didn't really follow. So it just – but it got – it's steadily bigger and bigger. And I must admit, the Rock Palace gig, a little band called The Police were actually on as well. So, you know.
Oh, I've heard of them.
I'm sorry about that. That's why it was a 10,000-seater. Jack Bruce was on as well on that bill. I got to sing Spoonful with him.
Wow.
Which was pretty awesome. Yeah.
So you guys are opening, but you're doing an hour and a half set here.
Oh, yeah. No, we were all treated equally. In fact, I think we were on after The Police, even though they were the biggest selling band at the time. And, you know, we'd built up a pretty strong reputation and, you know, so we did well as a live act. And my record sold a little bit more every time.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a kind of slow, healthy thing. It wasn't bad at all.
Now, is it weird to watch you from 30. By the way, I gotta tell you, David Wilde gave me this DVD, and I drank some red wine, and I just sunk into my sofa, and I think I watched it 2 times in a row.
Excellent.
And I just thought I was back in. I was a little of that. But I watched mainly during the refractory period, and this was it was like I was back in high school again. And it was just God love that David Wilde, because I didn't have this disc. But I just thought how tight the band was and how great you were, and Brinsley Schwartz playing the lead guitar, how good that guy was. Like, he just played every song exactly how I heard it on the album.
Yeah, we were pretty close to the album arrangements, just twice as fast.
Right.
Because, we, you know, yeah, I was getting angrier every day for some reason.
Right.
You know?
So,
what amazes me about this is that two of those guitars there, I still own. The one I'm playing and the one Brinsley is playing, the Gibson Flying V, I bought that from him.
Oh, you brought it from
him? And both of them are used on my latest album.
And this is, by the way, Three Chords Good is the name of the latest. And it's the first time the rumor, the band, is back together.
Exactly, yeah.
Now, what got you guys apart?
Well, you know, 4 years is a very long time when you're young, and, you know, having this sort of success in the music business is a really, really long time. If you look at, there's a website that has a gig list on, you know, of touring in 1979.
Right.
We start at Belfast in January and end at Wellington, New Zealand, near Christmas. with not much off in between. And, you know, it always, as there's the driving force of artistry, where you want to hear your music in a different light.
Right.
You know, I thought the rumor, we'd covered a lot of ground.
So it wasn't, you know, it wasn't a bunch of ill will. It was just time to shift gears and move on.
For me, it was. I was driven to try something else. I wanted to sound slicker and softer, and I made another Grey Area. It was the first post-Rumour album with Jack Douglas, who'd done Double Fantasy, a very slick, smooth-sounding album. I just wanted to see what it was like. It was curiosity.
I have that album as well. I know you need to be sitting down when you hear that. Did you move to the Bay Area at some point, or where are you living now?
No, I'm based in upstate New York for the most part, in the wilds there, in the mountains.
Now, why not England?
Well, no, yet England's there, and I think, let's see, I'm ready to retire by a pond in England in about a week's time.
So you'll be back. I mean, you'll be buried next to your dad.
America has been incredibly good to me. The fans, you know, in England, of course, the press, the media in general, love to build you up a bit and then say, oh, we knew he was no good anyway after a few years. America isn't like that. America is much more generous, much more willing to actually listen and give you the time of day. And I can play, you know, 12 gigs solo in New Jersey and do pretty well.
I saw you in 1988, 89, Live Alone in America tour, your acoustic tour.
Did you really?
At the Palace, which is now something else. But it was where I went to. It was the after party for Molly Ringwald's Pretty in Pink, and also the club from the movie. Oh, hell. Can't think of it with Graham up there playing. All right, Graham. Hang in with us. I think we're going to do some news. Allison Rosen, you got some news?
I do.
I'll give a little love to one of our fine sponsors first. Vista Print, business owners. Graham, you need cards. We can put a little guitar or something on there so people know you rock. Graham, 250 business cards. What would you think something like that would set a fella back?
Well, I would think that would set you back an awful lot of money. Am I wrong?
Yeah, a lot of quid.
A lot of quids, man.
Yeah.
By the way.
What, you brought something?
Bam.
You brought things?
And there's three of them, and there's three of you here.
Oh. Ah,
perfect.
Thank you very much.
Yes, I paid for them myself. That wasn't even a promotional thing from the record company.
Thank you very much. Only you'd known a Vista print at the time.
Yes.
I know, that could have been a lot cheaper. I'm broke after that.
They can do postcards, buttons with Graham Parker. I guess you can put other people on them.
Why would you want to? That's all they offer.
Just Graham Parker buttons. 250 top quality business cards. $10, Graham.
Oh, come on.
$10.
You're kidding me.
That's right.
Oh, I like
that. I'm changing the game.
What a game changer.
Actually, I'm screwing it up, yeah. Okay, let me hit Mercari over here. House cluttered with unused stuff, kids' baseball gloves, sporting equipment, stuff like that. Dress doesn't fit anymore, only worn once. Old phone in a drawer. Mercari, it's a selling app that makes it fast and easy to sell almost anything. You can take a few pics, add a description, and boom, it is listed. Mercari even emails a shipping label when it sells. No awkward meetups. 500,000 plus reviews on the App Store. Average 4.8 star rating. You don't do better than that in the modern era. So don't let that stuff go to waste. Sell it, ship it, get paid with Mercari. Find Mercari on the App Store or Mercari.com. That is Mercari. Mercari, the selling app. Move some of that inventory, man.
And that was musical great Graham Parker, one of Adam's favorite musicians of all time, in studio. Now, he didn't play a song when he was there, but I will tell you this, Gio, there was a guitar in studio because I brought my acoustic guitar. And before the interview, Graham actually picked it up. Kind of more noodling, but he still played some stuff, and it was surreal because I was standing 5 feet from him, just watching him play my guitar, and it was a pretty shitty guitar too. I didn't really have a good one at the time, and he kind of made fun of it a little bit, but I didn't care. So
Adam, your employee's poor. It's a poor person guitar. Diddle, diddle,
diddle. It's true, so true. But I don't care. He played in front of us, and he really is the real deal. Anyway.
Wait. This episode's far from over, Chris.
Oh,
next
I know.
One coming up, Adam Carolla Show 211 with Frank Stallone, Teresa Strasser, and Brian Bishop.
Yes.
From December of 2009. They break down Sylvester Stallone's career, as they always seem to do. They talk Rennie Harlan and the importance of editing in film as an art form, how it can kind of change a movie. Frank is dropping all kinds of inside stories he's probably not supposed to share. That's part of the charm of him being on these episodes. We previously played the clip of him trying to hunt down the rooster he had a vendetta with. It was a hilarious clip. And you, of course, can hear the Basic Cable commentary where Adam and him watch the movie The Specialist. And he can't say activate the failsafe. He keeps saying activate the sail face. And it's a hilarious, one of the funniest commentaries you'll ever hear. I definitely recommend checking out. Until then, Adam Carolla Show 211. Thanks a lot.
And now, part two of the Adam Carolla podcast with guests Teresa Strasser, Bald Brian, and Frank Stallone.
Oh yeah.
Speaking of what's his fuck, Frank Stallone, oh. By the way, is heading this way. Come on in, Frank. Have a seat next to Bald Brian over there.
Well, how you doing?
Hey, how's it going, man?
Good to see you. That's Teresa. You know Teresa?
Hi. How you doing, Teresa?
Good. How are
great
you?
To see you,
how
Frank.
You doing, old man?
Oh, I'm doing great.
Good. So much incredible reaction. I'm more reaction from doing your show than like these Parallel One stations. I don't know what's up, man.
I gotta say it's very flattering when people come on the show and they say, hey, I did the Tonight Show 2 weeks ago and nary a mention. I did your show and people are coming out of the woodwork saying stuff. It's really a nice feeling.
It's amazing. No, you have this... which I like that kind of fan base you have. It's kind of young, hip, little quirky, which is good.
Right.
I mean, I'm not like a, definitely not run-of-the-mill character, so.
Frank came on the show a couple months back and basically blew our socks off.
We had a blast. We're two Italian guys, both like boxing, you know, all that good stuff, which I will tell you, Adam will tell you, I'm considered one of the top boxing historians, and I have never lost three in a row with Pacquiao. I've lost three in a row. I'm not betting against him.
Oh, anymore. You're not betting against Pacquiao anymore.
Nah. Because the guy goes up in weight and doesn't lose any power or speed. He's like Durant.
Yeah. Yeah, we're... Frank is...
Wait a second. You mean... hold on. Wait, I'm going to impress you. I can't remember in Spanish, but Hands of Stone?
That's right.
Wow.
Manos
de
Piedra.
Thank you.
That's right, man. And he's probably one of the great fighters of the 20th century, I'd say.
Pacquiao or Roberto Duran?
Duran.
Oh, yeah, Duran. The only
the No Moss fight.
Yes. Yeah. The only... He has two blemishes sort of on his record. One is the No Moss fight. And the other, if you take a look at it, one of the most impressive knockouts you'll ever see.
Iran Barkley? Oh, Hearns.
No, it's Tommy Hearns in the second round just dispatching of the guy.
No, it was one of the great knockouts ever. It just went right on his face.
The thing about Tommy Hearns is Tommy Hearns was 6'2 and like 154 pounds and it crazy leverage and crazy reach.
Yeah.
And also, he was one of these guys that first he started off as the Cobra. And then great movie your brother starred in.
Yeah, right.
And then
The Hitman.
And then later on became The Hitman. And he also had like a Motor City Hitman. Like
Motor City
Cobra. Like nine fucking names. Like relax already. If you can punch like that, you don't need
to. He really could hit.
Names.
He might be one of the great welterweights because, I mean, you got to realize welterweights in the 30s were like 5'6". This guy was, and he really could hit hard.
6'2", crazy
power.
Leverage.
Do you box yourself?
I did, yeah, as an amateur, yeah.
Yeah, and a good boxer. Yeah, actually had a great boxing match on Howard Stern we talked about against Geraldo Rivera.
Wow.
And beat up on him pretty nicely.
Well, Geraldo stayed in shape, and I had stayed. I never got heavy, but you know, there's shape, and then there's boxing shape. You can look great. I've seen more. Well, yeah, you don't. Adam will tell you. I've seen more guys come in buffed bodybuilders and can't go around, maybe half around.
No endurance.
Dead.
Right.
It's boxing shape. So when you see guys can go 15, some of my old boxing films, I have 43-minute rounds with 4-ounce gloves. Oh, I have one. Yeah. I have the gloves from that fight, the Ad Wallgast battling Nelson fight, scheduled 45 rounds. I have the gloves from that fight, 4.5-ounce gloves.
You do have the boxer hands.
Yeah, a little bit. Or either Italian pasta pie, but like a pie man.
I think
we missed our calling. I think we've had Carolla Stallone's pizza
pies.
King.
Yeah.
We'd be like pie men in the back.
I was watching the movie, and Frank, I guess Frank is... You're on good terms with your brother? Or
not really.
Decent? Not really.
No.
Okay, good.
I still have those trunks, too.
Let me, it's a picture of Frank
That's
in his
me.
Fighting days. Looking damn good, by the way. Let me ask you this,
yes,
Frank,
sir.
About your brother. Because I was trying to figure this out. I watched the movie Driven the other night.
Yes.
You're the one?
I'm the guy, soup to nuts, stem to stern, I watch that movie. And I always thought it was a movie your brother was in, and I know a lot of his movies he had sort of like story by Sylvester Stallone or co-written by Sylvester Stallone. But that movie just said written by Sylvester Stallone.
Yeah, like the Rockies. Yeah, he wrote
the movie
all of those. Yeah,
Driven. And that movie was not a well-written movie.
Can I tell you, and I will tell you this, and seriously, and in his defense, and you know, he had written this script, because as you know, like his career was not doing well. You know,
At that point.
It was doing well. He was with this Franchise Pictures, was like, you know, might as well be with Quasimodo Films. You know what I mean? It was the worst. The guy used to own the Roxbury. Now you went from the biggest movie star in the world doing these movies. Okay.
Right.
The script was actually very, very good. But what he made a mistake was, I said, Sly, you direct it. Every time you direct something you do and write, it's always successful. Every time, you know, before he went through that period where he was doing Stop My Mom Will Shoot Cobra, all of a sudden he was busy playing golf and chasing girls instead of doing that, or doing dumb movies like Judge Dredd, which he should have directed also, but had a kid never directed that worked in Wardrobe. That was the director, seriously.
Of Judge Dredd.
Judge Dredd, and his shows. Mm-hmm. So from that, so he said, okay, well, hire Rennie Harlan. I go, why? Rennie Harlan's like, you directed Cliffhanger, not Rennie Harlan. Rennie Harlan was there, but you directed. He's the biggest movie star in the world. He's not going to let Rennie Harlan. He goes, Rennie goes, y'all boss, but I told you, yeah, fuck you.
All right, move the camera over here.
You know, I fucking fire you and throw you off the mountain, you prick.
I like Cliffhanger, by the way, quite a bit.
Well, that was a huge movie, but that's Sly, because he's a great editor and he knows the camera. I mean, his first movie he directed was a great Paradise Alley.
Right.
Which is pretty interesting.
Right.
So what happened is, so he hired Rennie Harlan, to direct Driven. I said, I wouldn't do that if I were you. Okay. Mm-hmm. The script was great. It was really cool. You had Burt Reynolds. There were some really good moments there.
Burt Reynolds in a wheelchair.
With a bad face job.
Oh, wow.
And I said, and he was, Burt's my man. He was handsome. I don't know. They pulled a little too tight on that.
Yeah, you got the Kenny Rogers.
That kind of look where when you try to smash your face through some cellophane.
Sure. Yeah.
That kind of look.
And he was good looking.
An Edward Monk scream look.
Yeah. By the way, somebody has to tell, like, if there are any... I just want to get this out there to all the male stars that are getting a little bit long in the tooth. You can still get laid with a couple of wrinkles, with a little gray hair, with a couple of liver spots. You can still bang 19-year-old hostesses from TGI Fridays, just as long as you got that bankroll.
Jerry Buss has made a career of that.
Yes, and you're fucking Burt Reynolds. You don't have to go under the knife.
No.
Look, if you're a starlet... Yeah, and you're getting in your 50s, you gotta keep it good. If you're Sharon Stone, you gotta look like Sharon Stone. If you're a guy, go ahead and get fucking old and battered. And drink
girls don't mind it as much.
No, you don't. Look at Clint Eastwood.
It's
I would
expected.
Have sex with him.
Yes,
he looks amazing. He's wrinkled.
He's a mess, but fine.
Unforgiven.
But the problem is when you see a guy, you know he's 70 and he has like no fucking lines. Well, you've been in a flotation tank for 40 years. What you've been like? What do they call those hot houses? Like
hyperbaric chamber.
Chamber for 40 years.
T.O. and Michael Jackson all shared the same hyperbaric chamber.
That must have been a good time.
All right, so he should have directed.
Yes. What happened? We went there, and he said this fucking guy is shooting too much footage. Because all you see more girls walking around at the racetrack with their boobs hanging out and white beaters and stuff.
Yeah.
So he's going like this. So we go to the screening at the private on the set. And he's sitting there, and I see the blood leaving his face. It's like this. I said, someone's going to get hit.
But Bert's face didn't move?
Well, Bert's face didn't move on the screen. Sly's face, I'm sitting next to him. And I know him. I see his face getting real tight.
Mm-hmm.
I said, Rennie's going to get fucking poleaxed before we leave this room.
Mm-hmm.
He walks out and goes, are you fucking crazy? I mean, he became...
He never
Rambo.
Saw the finished product until that time.
Well, that was the cut. So he goes, I'm taking this fucking film, right?
Right.
They didn't back him. The two fucking guys that from Franchise Films didn't back his play. So, okay, you got your cut. by DJ rules, okay, we got the cut. We don't like the cut. We come back. That's what like guys like
Directors Guild.
Yeah, right. Yeah. You think those guys like Jerry Bruckheimer let a piece of shit go out? Right. They would take it. So they wouldn't back him. So this guy Rennie, who my brother gave a job to, is calling in lawyers into DGA going after my brother. Oh, I said he's trying to ruin my picture.
Right.
And that was terrible because it was really some great stuff shot. It was a great story.
Well, it's a good premise.
No, but it was there as like Judge Dredd. If you read the script of Judge Dredd, it was great.
Oh, no, wait a minute.
You didn't read the script. Believe it or not, the script of Rhinestone was fucking great. I'm telling you, it was great.
I believe it.
It was funny. But when you get Dolly Parton in there and she had all her like boy toys around, I said, she's going to steal the picture from him, dude. Because you hired a guy who can't direct. Don Zimmerman is one of the great editors. That's what he was. Film Academy. But film editor and director, two different things.
Listen, I can tell you from firsthand experience that a movie, once it's shot, can go into the edit bay.
Oh, yeah.
A 6 and come out a 3, or can go in the edit bay
Absolutely.
A 6 and come out a 9.5. And there's so much that can be done in the post. And also, yeah, you can take a good script and fuck it up, and you can take a bad script and make it
great. Well, I can say that about Rambo.
Randy Harlan, by the way, is infamous for having directed the biggest box office bomb of all time.
Gina Davis.
Cutthroat Island.
Yeah. Cutthroat Island.
Cutthroat was the biggest money loser of all time.
So are you thinking of that?
He directed a couple of successful pictures before that, but
it's been great.
What do we know him for?
Nothing. For bad movies.
Did he do 2012? Is that a Rennie Harlan?
Is that bad?
It's bad, but if you like bad movies, it's good. Like me, I'm the guy who watched Driven twice over the weekend. So you know.
Okay, Ishtar? Did you watch Ishtar?
I didn't watch Ishtar because it was supposed to be bad, and then it turned good at a certain point.
Did you see his movie, Hammer?
Like Bell Bottoms.
It's fun.
Very good movie.
Thank you.
No, there was a lot of funny things in it. But see, I know your personality. I'd be Italian. I was getting like the little innuendos you were saying. I liked it.
I like bad movies. So see, the thing about Ishtar is I like action bad. Dialogue.
Or sex bad, like Showgirls.
Ooh. Okay. Showgirls.
Watch that.
You know what that cost? That make that piece of shit Showgirls? That was a Wolfgang. Was that Wolfgang Peterson or something? One of those guys?
I don't know. It didn't look like a cheap film.
He was a German perv. You know, a lot of those guys. The Germans are really fucking weird. I did a movie in Berlin, and I'm sitting in a bar. I go, look at the broads in this fucking place. Guy goes, yeah, it would be nice if they were women. I go, I said, okay, German fag, get me the fuck out of here.
But well, they do enjoy that crazy poop porn.
Oh, they're into plate jobs. They're into bad stuff. They're Cleveland steamers. They're pretty sick fucking dudes, man.
Can I say this about Germans? I think the Germans, in a way, are much like the Japanese, which is they're very buttoned-down society that when they go nuts, they go apeshit. Well,
bonsai attack is...
Yeah, they're sort of like kids that grow up in a Catholic family that's very buttoned down.
The whole country is the preacher's daughter.
Yeah, and then they go to your butt. They come to your house to sleep over, and they just go nuts.
How about this? The Japanese have bonsai, and the Germans have Blitzkrieg.
Paul Verhoeven, by the way.
Paul Verhoeven.
Did he do Flashdance? I should really know that.
He was a pretty credible director.
I think he did.
My friend worked there. He's just a fucking lech.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
He's a piece of shit, you know?
I think Rennie Harlan did Die Hard 2.
He did. I thought it was McTiernan.
I think he died one.
Were you saying that Rambo was a bad script?
It was so bad. First Blood. I'll tell you the story in this. This is the same people.
We're talking about the first Rambo.
First Blood, I love that script. With Brian Dennehy. Okay.
Yeah.
This script had been around for years. For years and years, and no one wanted it. And so these two guys, Andy Vanya and Mario Casar, one was a wig importer from China, another guy, and they've been pushing the script around for years, and no one bought. So Sly wrote, I'll try it. They paid him a tremendous amount of money for that time. Tremendous amount of money. Millions and millions and millions for him to do it, because he was just coming off Rocky III. He's big. Huge. Right. Number one movie. So he shoots the movie. He almost killed the director. He almost threw him off the mountain. Yes. It was Bruce Malmuth. Like, insulted him. And my brother's a hothead. So he insulted him in front of the cast. He's like, I'm going to fucking kill this guy. And he held him like over the... Beat the fuck out of him. Held him like over the mountain to throw him off.
Really?
Well, he's not... Gave
the idea for Cliffhanger.
Yeah.
That's it. Yeah, it could have been... Yeah. Could have been Director Hanger. Right. Yeah, it could have been dead. So anyway, he's doing the movie. Again, he shows at my house. He goes, he looks at these guys and goes, "What, are you fucking kidding me or what?" It was horrible.
The first cut.
The first, it was horrible. So I goes, "What did I do? I'm coming off the biggest movie of the year, Rocky III. I'm this piece of shit."
I should.
So Sly goes, "I'm taking the movie." Sly goes, "I will buy the movie back for you and destroy it." That, I'm serious.
Destroy.
I swear to God.
Oh.
I was sitting there. He goes, "I will
Power
buy
move.
This movie."
Wow.
Well, he had a lot of money, man. You know, yeah. At that time, he's getting $8 million. A lot of money in a lot of money now.
When you buy a movie back, do you have to buy you back, too?
Yeah. I guess. I don't know.
And I just want people to know, because I know Teresa probably don't have the Rambo box set sitting at home. The first Rambo movie, they became sort of cartoonish at a certain
first,
point.
First
the
one was
first
great.
One was
first
just
blood.
A good action.
First Blood. And the
outdoors.
Second one was good. First two
yeah.
Were, yeah.
The first one especially was just a good... It wasn't a Rambo movie.
It was
Billy Jack almost.
Right.
Like
it was a good action movie. Sorry, go ahead.
So we had that. So he said, "I want to buy it back." And they go, "Oh, no, we can't do all this bullshit." So he goes, "Good, I want it." He got it then. He re-edited the whole thing. And it became the biggest blockbuster of the year. I mean, it was a huge movie. I mean, it cost nothing to make. And then the second one was even bigger. So he was on a... Unlike a lot of people, remember, Rocky 1 was huge. Rocky 2, people forget, but that was movie of the year. Big. Rocky 3 was huge. Rocky 4 was... Rocky 5, forget about. Rocky, the last one, was a... not. It was big, but I thought it was one of the best ones.
I enjoyed it.
The last one.
Rocky Balboa.
I thought those
good.
First and the bookend.
But it's incredible that he has two franchises... By the way, you need one. I mean,
I got to get my own. What
right?
the fuck?
That guy has two franchises, but it's crazy that somebody has two franchises because it's usually just one franchise and then you do some other movies you're lucky. The idea that the guy has two franchises.
Yeah, and he's
franchises.
Doing another Rambo. I go, Jesus Christ.
He's doing another Rambo.
That's what I heard.
Do you ever work with him on his movies?
No.
Never.
No.
Now, are you guys, and I don't want to make this all about your brother, but quickly, are you... On speaking terms, right now. I mean,
there's no anger. No, there's not. There's not like there's any anger. It's just that that's how we roll. Sometimes, we just don't hang, and then sometimes we're hanging. So
Thanksgiving,
it's like,
were you together?
No, I was with my mother. I spent a lot of time with my mom and my father. My father's 90.
Is he not? Why wasn't he home for the?
Because he's got his own crew. He's got five kids and.
Things have gone to his head a little bit.
I don't know if it's gone to his head. I think that's maybe where he's at this point. He's been working a lot, and the thing is he's putting a lot of time in. It's really different. It's funny, like my gig, I've been playing music all my life, okay? And I'm talking about good friend Richie Sambora. And I knew Richie from Bon Jovi when he used to was playing, "Hey, Richie, move that amp for me." He was a kid. He goes, "Yeah, man, we just found out today we sold 120 million records." I go, "That's great, Rich." I say, and we're talking stuff. He goes, "Yeah, man, we got to go do Saturday Night Live. I'm leaving. I'm there. And I'm playing like the fucking Mint for free." Okay, I'm going like this. I said, didn't I put you in a movie once, babe?
And that was Frank Stallone, my favorite Stallone.
He's up there.
2009. I love him, man. He's cool. And no slight on Sly by any means.
He's in my top three Stallones.
Yeah, me too. All right, so the next clip. So there are two acts that have played here in our studio that have consisted of four or more people. One of them being the a cappella group last year who sang the Christmas song, but this one was a band called Toad the Wet Sprocket.
After Glenn Phillips came in one-on-one and played live, and we played all those songs, they came in studio as a band, and they played a couple more songs. And we're going to play both of them today, including this first one, New Constellation, from their new album, circa 2013. Adam Carolla Show, episode 1116, How Appropriate, with Toad the Wet Sprocket, from July of 2013.
We're going to hear something off the new album?
Sure. We could try that.
Let's
do that.
This
is his New Constellation from our album, New Constellation.
Hey, what's that thing I can't remember?
it so far off center. It's a fractured view through faulty lenses. And what do you trust when you can't trust your senses? And I can fly through the heavens on the power of my heart, thread my way through a string of stars to write your name in a new constellation, declare my love. No smoky haze, just a speck on a speck on a spiral arm. Yeah, it feels so good to be so small. And I can fly through the heavens on the power of my heart, thread my way through a string of stars to write your name. Remember, and I can fly through the heavens on the power of my heart, thread my way through a string of stars to write your name in a new constellation, declare my love to all creation.
Wet Sprocket, everybody. Back with a vengeance.
And that was Toad the Wet Sprocket doing the very rare band performance.
The more instruments, the more voices you get in there harmonizing, the sound just gets richer and better. It sounds almost as if it's not acoustic.
Yeah, agreed. Before we get to this next clip, I want to remind everybody that Adam has some live shows coming up. He's going to be at Reno, Virginia Street Brewhouse, December 7th. For Adam Carolla's Unprepared for the Holidays. He's also doing a couple of shows in Oxnard at Levity Live, December 13th and 14th. So make sure to come out for these holiday shows. We're going to have a blast, and you can watch someone pull Adam's balls. Now, I'm excited. This is the return of Lisa Loeb in 2013.
As you previously heard, there's a long history of Lisa Loeb and Mike Dawson and the Adam Carolla Show. This is her debut on the ACS once it became a podcast after the radio show days. It's Adam Carolla Show 1026. It's from March of 2013, featuring Lisa Loeb, Allison Rose, and Brian Bishop. It's her triumphant return. She comes with a short interview, and she plays No Fairy Tale live in the studio. It's pretty great.
Lisa Loeb in the studio. Great to see you, sweetie.
Hello, hello.
No Fairy Tale. Get it together there, Dawson. He's all over the place because he's smitten by you, as we all are. No Fairy Tale, name the album, available on Amazon. You know what to do. Want to put a little win in the sales of the pirate ship, me mateys? You go to adamcroll.com and you click on the Amazon banner, and you get the Lisa Loeb album, No Fairy Tale. Good to see you again.
You too, and buy it. Don't just listen to it for free.
Oh, no, no, yeah.
That's
no.
That's what we do these days. We watch music.
Oh, believe me.
Yeah.
No.
It's awesome.
I have family members
who are in a book I wrote saying, hey, I read a fair amount of it on Amazon. Seems pretty good. It's like, you're in the book. You don't squeeze the trigger, sweetie?
I know. I read enough.
They put a lot on there. Thank you. That's how I got rich.
My father's a doctor, and people come in all the time who are very, very sweet, and they tell him that they bought the record. And I say, you know what? That's impossible. I've seen exactly how many people have bought the record in Dallas. And
they're bullshitting.
Well, or I think people confuse the I bought it with they confuse things with I've actually listened to it and I've purchased it with I know who you are, I've seen you before.
Yes.
I mean, it's flattering. They mean it to be flattering, and I appreciate that. But it's also wonderful when they take that extra step.
It's interesting.
They could flatter you with their dollars.
I have found, and I've always, you know, I've never been this, hey, man, it's the internet, and it's art, and it's free, man. It's like, no, it's not. It's somebody putting a lot of work into something, right. And it's money. You have to pay engineers, and there's equipment, and there's time and everything else. But I think there's an interesting thing that's going on in our society, and you tell me what you think, Lisa Loeb.
Okay.
Money used to count for more because you held it in your hand.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
You gave it to people. It's like you felt it. And I know a lot of people that just kind of go through life, a lot of my friends' wives and a few dudes out there, right. That they never really come across money. It's like I got a credit card, I got a debit card, I got a gas card. And it becomes sort of easy because you never really see it or feel it.
Right, it's like pretend.
And
I agree. I was thinking about
that
today.
It's easy to steal that way, too.
Oh, yeah,
no one would ever lean into your car with the window open and grab your CD off your passenger seat.
You're right. Oh, my gosh, when you think about it that way.
That's tangible. Like, no decent person would do that. But, hey, if you can share a file for free, somebody else maybe purchased it and is going to give it to you or let you download it or whatever. Right. That doesn't feel like leaning into someone's car, just like swiping the debit card doesn't feel – it's so much easier to take all
your
girlfriends out to sushi when you're swiping the card versus peeling off tens.
Right. Like when you pay for gas and you pay for it with a credit card.
Yeah.
And you don't even take the receipt. I don't even want the receipt.
Yeah.
You know, but it's like buying a pair of jeans or something. You're like, I'm just buying a pair of jeans. But it's gas.
So
– and it's not with money.
It's tough.
Simoleons.
Yeah, because when you started back in the day –
People didn't have credit cards.
And nobody could go to the internet. There's no iTunes.
It's true. I will say though, I don't always purchase all my music either. I do go check out music on the internet. And even when I was a kid, we all made mixtapes for each other.
That's
true. We all had our albums and we'd make mixtapes and we'd bring them with us everywhere and share them with people. Eventually sometimes we'd buy the records.
It was kind of fun, and it's a thing that our kids will never really have. I mean, that hitting it just right. I could remember getting the 90-minute cassette and hitting pause just right, skipping ahead to the next song, then timing it out right, you know, so you didn't run out of tape at the end or have just enough at the end, you know, keeping the counter and everything.
And we all knew a couple of short songs that would just fit at the very end of a side of it.
Yeah. Right.
I only have 98 seconds left.
And then there's just the stupid time. Like, I used to teach boxing classes, so I had, like, my mixtape boxing, you know, fast, fun one, and then there's the I Got Dumped Again tape.
Aw. Do you still have them? I still have those.
You have my dumped again tape?
I don't have your dumped again tape, but I do have a lot of mixtapes still. I should probably listen to them.
Do you have a cassette that will play them?
My car.
Somebody ripped it off.
In my car. No, I have it in my car. I have a cassette player in my car.
That is sad.
Is that crazy?
That's a bad sign.
It's awesome.
No, it's not. It's very bad.
I was still writing music on cassette tapes when I bought the car. Yeah.
Rich Man, Poor Man, by the way.
So, yeah, having the cassette is... I'm looking here, and it says that you attended Brown University.
I did attend Brown University.
That's a smarty pants, man. That's an Ivy League school, baby.
I did my homework in high school. Yeah.
Well, what is your story going back?
Back in the day, in the olden days, well, I listened to cassette tapes and albums and vinyl. Oh. In high school, I was a DJ, and I wanted to be a DJ when I grew up because I thought you could play any music you wanted. It turns out that's not what DJs get to do anymore. I grew up in Dallas, Texas. And
by the way, DJ back then meant radio DJ, not jackass at club.
Right.
I turned sideways.
I did play parties, though. I did do parties.
You DJed parties.
But it was with actual albums, and we didn't, you know, we weren't like those kind of DJs.
Is there anything heavier than a milk crate filled with 70s albums.
No, seriously, I would carry this big two crates, Peaches, that was some record store called Peaches, huge crates of records like The Cure and Led Zeppelin and Brian Eno and whatever else I was listening to. I'd carry these huge crates late at night into this radio station to play whatever I wanted to play. And I used to play electric guitar and carry an amplifier and an electric guitar too. And I still play electric now, but I don't, you know, walk around carrying a really huge amplifier and a case.
I mean, it's so insane. I mean, you know, you talk about all this sort of technology stuff and how it's touched your life and stuff. I'm just picturing like a 19-year-old Jimmy Kimmel as a wedding DJ coming up with the four crates of records and the stands with the big amps on there and the
smoke
speakers,
machine.
The smoke machine
smoke
and
machine.
Setting up. I mean, the table. I mean,
strobe lights.
You had to have a van if you wanted to do that for a gig. Now it's just you get the iPod. It's insane.
Has there ever been a smaller girl than a 19-year-old Lisa Loeb with all the musical equipment?
16-year-old.
Oh, my
God. Carrying crates.
So you're doing well in school.
I was doing well in school and doing lots of other fun things on the side from school, and I got into Brown University, which was so exciting.
And your dad's a doctor, so he was happy. But you wanted to get far away.
I wanted to go someplace where, when I visited Brown, it was rainy and cloudy outside, and I thought, this is the perfect place for me.
Really?
Yeah, because I'll wear like cable knit sweaters and, you know, study. Which I probably wore a lot of cable knit sweaters, Benetton sweaters. Do you remember those?
Yeah,
the huge Benetton sweaters?
Sure.
I don't know if I studied as much as I probably should have studied.
And then when did the music, I mean, music was always around, but when did it go full time for you?
All freshman year, I had a freshman roommate named Elizabeth Mitchell, and we had a band together, and we played like the first week of school we were going to play the first week of school. It didn't work out because we didn't sign up for the freshman talent show soon enough or whatever. But we played a few months in, and we had a great audience. Like, everyone from our freshman hall showed up. We had a great audience, and we just kept playing, and it was all going really well. And I probably focused way more on music than I did on my studies for many years.
Was Dr. Dad initially a little disappointed in
My mom and my dad were not super excited that I was going to be a musician when I grew up. Even though they would come visit me at school and I'd play concerts and they'd come see me, I was already doing it. And I think I was probably just as worried as they were. So I was trying to make it work. You know, I wanted to make sure I could make a living being a musician.
And was the plan to just be a working musician? I mean, the success that you had, I mean, having, you know, Billboard number one song in 1994, that had to be insane, right?
That was crazy. It was one of those things where I was temping a lot as an office temp worker because I could type pretty fast. And I owned an Ann Taylor suit. And so I would go temp. And I did that for a few years. And I tried to go back to school for psychology at NYU, but I was still focused too much on music. Mm-hmm. So I all of a sudden I got this opportunity to put my song Stay on a soundtrack. Ethan Hawke was a friend of mine. He's an actor.
Sure.
He was a friend of mine, and he wanted to give that song to Ben Stiller to see if Ben would put that song into a movie.
Mm-hmm.
And Ben did put the song into Reality Bites along with a bunch of other people, executives who were in charge.
Right.
So that was a really huge opportunity, and it made me quit my temp jobs and say this was going to be it. I was going to make music. I mean, in retrospect, that probably wouldn't have been a good reason just to quit your temp jobs.
Right.
Like, you think those kind of opportunities when you're starting out, you think those opportunities, that's it. It's all happening. But it actually was all happening. But, you know, I don't know why.
It's a temp job. It's meant to be quit. Or at least temporary.
Yeah.
Are you married?
I'm married, and I have two kids.
Wow.
And on my way over here, I actually have a 3-year-old and an 8-month-old baby.
Wow.
I know. And,
just out
and
of
I
the
left
car
my husband.
Or? Oh, no.
No, I left them with my husband for the next hour and a half while he feeds them and puts them to bed.
Is it one of the Zappas?
No, it's not.
Is it a famous person?
It's my husband, Roy Hershkovitz. It's very famous, Roy Hershkovitz.
Wow. The power forward for the Avalanche? Oh, no, wait. What team would he play for?
I know. I actually felt like I was in some early 80s movie when I was driving over here in the Valley.
Yeah.
You know, and trying to, like, eat an apple and put lipstick on in the car. The sun going down. It should have been the sun coming up. And something about aliens. But I just felt like it was the, you know, I have a whole family.
So, you were single.
Yeah.
One of the second to last time or whenever we saw each other. And you had number one single, the show
That's
about
right.
you being single, which made Dawson think you were single.
Yes. No, I'm not single.
Yeah.
I am Dawson whole family now.
Mm-hmm.
Perfect.
Mm-hmm. Hey, are you sitting down, by the way, Dawson?
Yes.
The dad from Brady Bunch? Gay.
Oh,
not
yeah,
a real family. They weren't even married, those two.
Wow.
Dawson's world is
spoiler, dude.
Yeah, you can't. Just because Lisa's playing single on TV don't mean she's available.
I was single on TV then.
But
I
not. Was single on were then. You single when Dawson asked you out?
When Dawson
just
asked
say
me
no,
out.
It'll be so much
oh,
easier.
Oh, no.
Yeah, good. All right. Otherwise.
Wasn't. Otherwise, yeah. Married, children.
You'd have a little, what? You got a 3-year-old to just be smoking a cigarette and talking about avocados right now. Because that's his thing. Oh, and Alan Parsons. I mean, Alan Parsons. Yeah.
Perfect.
Yeah. So.
Sounds so similar to what's going on in my house right now.
What does your husband do?
He works at Conan O'Brien.
Oh, is he right?
He works at the show. No, he works in the music production.
Oh.
Yeah, so you might
great.
Have even run into him over there.
It's a perfect marriage then,
it
literally.
It is. We actually was on the I was on the show the other day. And so I got to hang out with him at work. That was fun.
That's nice.
And my daughter keeps talking about Conan O'Brien. She's like, Conan O'Brien is very tall.
Yeah, that's especially
he
when you're 3
tall.
Years old. He's
yeah.
the tallest man. That's why I always felt bad for Andy Richter. And it's the way everything in life works. And just everyone should know this, which is Andy Richter – I've met a bunch of times in person. The first thing you think is, oh, you're not short.
No, he's super tall also.
He's, I don't know, 6'1".
Like
maybe
yeah.
He's not a short guy at all. But if you stand next to a guy 6'6 or 6'7, then you're a short guy. That's just the way it goes. You do that math no matter what. Poor Andy Richter could not look shorter or fatter standing next to a guy who's taller or skinnier than Conan O'Brien, and that's how you will look.
This is totally true. I'm actually not bald at all, everyone listening.
We're just incredibly hirsute.
No, yeah. I've always said I want a guy to follow me around when I'm rich.
Or an airplane.
I want a guy. I got a guy, by the way, I'm you know, I got a guy breaking who breaks my shoes in.
Oh.
Right. And I need another guy.
Seriously?
No. I need...
I needed one of those for my wedding. I went in the day before my wedding to say, can you stretch these shoes out for me?
Oh, really?
And the guy was like, you need to be wearing them. That's the only way to stretch out your shoes.
Oh.
I was like, but I'm getting married tomorrow.
Yeah.
So
yeah, you can't
I should have hired
those.
Somebody in New York City to
there
wear them.
There are guys who do that.
Yeah.
Yeah. They should combine the shoe breaker inners with the dog walkers.
Yes.
That's a great idea. It's like solar power.
It'd
yeah.
be speed breaking in.
Yeah.
And it'd be hilarious to see.
And again, another one of those great 80s or 90s things where the hot
yes.
chick had the 15 dogs yeah. being pulled along with a skirt mm-hmm. flying up in the air. Yeah.
Or Patrick Dempsey with the 15 dogs wearing pumps.
Mm-hmm.
Perfect.
We got a rom-com. You got to write another song.
Oh, yeah.
So I always think I need a guy with a super huge, fat, big melon head. You know those guys with the big melon head
mm-hmm.
to
yeah.
get in the picture with me because I'm tired of seeing my big fat head in the picture with the guy with the skinny head. So I want to travel with a guy with a huge,
you feel like you have a fat
huge,
head?
Huge, it's not. It's not.
That's what I'm hearing.
It's medium fat, but I want the fat. I always want to be the second fattest head in the picture. You don't
yeah.
want to be the fattest head
no.
in the picture.
It's
you know
being
I mean?
The smallest one, too, though. Because you feel like something's... Like, I had this watch that was a Menudo watch in the 80s. And all the faces
that's
were the
a
same.
A band, by the way.
A band from the 80s, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
With, you know...
Ricky Martin
yeah. in it.
I
and
mean,
one
who,
of the faces...
What are you talking about? Am I gay? What are you talking to me? I'm listening
one
to Grant Parker, man.
Was huge. It was like they had cut the face out and stuck a different face in there for the
yeah.
replacement guy. But I always have, like, in Japan, people always say to me, like, you have such a small face. And I never thought about that before.
It's nice.
I don't think about having a small face.
You're lucky.
Especially when you're, you know, looking at your face down here and you're like...
Yeah.
On your iPhone, and you're going down an escalator, and you look,
yeah.
you see your face by accident. You're like, ah,
oh, yeah,
no,
awful.
Don't look
iPhone.
Down.
That's really
oh, no,
terrible
no, that's
on an
horrible.
Escalator.
You're a monster. It's like there's a monster in
yeah.
my phone. No, I've said it. I've said many times. Actually, I've only said it once. The worst mirror on the planet is the one in the barber chair, in front of the barber chair, because
oh, yeah.
they put that cape around. Put that cape around you. And they, what?
They have a mirror in the barber
shop? Yeah, you got to go in just to see what's
what
going
on
in those
on
places.
What the hell is on those barber shops?
I'll tell you all about it one day. They put the cape on you and they'll choke your head off. So
yeah.
it's sort of your head
kind of. And
then
you're like, oh, and my neck's fat too?
Yeah, your head mushrooms up. Then they lift me up
And then you're kind of looking down on yourself a little. So you just look like a big mushroom head with five chins, like looking at yourself in this way too well-lit area.
Your neck has love handles.
Yes. Yeah. The best mirror on the planet is the one on the ceiling in the elevator.
Oh, yeah,
you ever get in an elevator and you're like, hotel, and you're like, what's up? And then you're, ooh.
But not the side mirrors. Not the, like, amber color lit from above. Like, oh, God.
Like, oh, yeah. Man, we're going to heaven.
Hello, cheekbones.
Hey, cheekbones. We're taking you to the penthouse. All right. Lisa has a song. I have
a new record.
Sponsor.
A sponsor?
Well, I figured you'd step up and get your stuff ready. And I'd. Oh, yeah. That was my plan. We'll talk it up.
Okay.
You cool? Tell me about the new record.
We don't have to talk about it.
I want a new record. I want to hear about it.
It's a new record.
We need to know.
It's a record. It's a CD. It's called No Fairy Tale. Mm-hmm. And actually, on the front of it, when I took that picture, I was pregnant. Very pregnant.
Oh, I don't have it on.
You can't.
We'll pull it up.
I was in the middle of I made the record really quickly with my friend named Chad Gilbert, who's in a band called Newfound Glory.
Oh, I know
them. Which is a punk rock band. Yeah, yeah. They're great. And they covered my song Stay, and they did a really punky version of it, which was really cute, and they asked me to sing on it. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it's supposed to be cute. It's tough, too.
Yeah.
Of course it's tough.
Yeah, it's edgy.
It's cute. It's edgy, but it's cute because it was just totally different and energetic and everything. So I sang on it, and later Chad asked if he could produce a record for me. And we made like a punky poppy rock record together.
Oh, there's by the way, there. And see, there look at you.
Pregnant.
With a thin face.
Pregnant.
Mm-hmm. Thin face and pregnant. See?
Camera slightly above.
Smart. Don't
and
go
lightning.
Low with the camera.
Don't go low with the camera.
Yeah.
Do not.
Oh, who, by the way, who are these assholes?
Oh, boy.
You know what I'm talking about.
I think I do.
I'm 6'2", and all I do is take pictures all day long with people after the show.
Right.
Selling this thing, that. Here's a picture thing. And these guys, the person hands them the camera. They hold the camera
down in their fucking belt buckle.
Like, hey. Could you make my head look any fatter?
They also do the thing. Yeah, this is where they flip if it's an iPhone, they flip it so the lens is on the bottom.
Right. And then they hold it in front of them and down, and they're 5'9", I'm 6'6". It's like, this is going to look horrible.
Yeah, listen, Ansel Adams, just take it a little bit above.
My husband is tall.
Have some dignity.
Every picture comes from above.
Yes. Get an A-frame ladder and climb up it.
Yeah.
Thank you.
You should bring one with you.
All right. A little love.
With your shoe walker.
My dog walker, shoe breaker inner should
carries
also
carries the ladder.
Who should also have a huge head and an A-frame ladder. Lisa Loeb, No Fairy Tale.
I'm tuning my guitar just to make sure.
Mm-hmm.
So exciting. So this is a song I wrote with my friend Maya Sharp. And I even got Tegan from Tegan and Sarah to she wrote a couple songs on the record.
It's nice that you collaborate and give everyone credit.
Why not? Oh, do people collaborate and they pretend they did it themselves?
Well, people tend to leave out other people's names sometimes they're talking about stuff they did.
I come from a family of four kids. You got to give each other credit.
Love that about you.
Or else, that would be bad. Okay. You want me to play this song?
Yeah.
This is called No Fairy Tale. Prince in the summer was a drag in the spring. How could you know that he took off his ring? And everything you wanted behind the castle wall. 100 white horses were stuck in the stall. But it's no fairy tale. There's no breadcrumb trail to lead you back, but it's just as well. That's a better one to tell. You tried, but you can't bear the weight of the glitter and the glue. So you lie down to dream of the kiss that'll wake you. Once upon a time can lead to a hapless ever after. When the tears are real, so is the laughter. But it's no fairy tale. But there's no breadcrumb trail to lead you back, but it's just as well. And you can close the book and curse the turn it took. Tell the true story of how you fell. That
are turning red and gold, and no one had to come along and cast a spell. But it's no fairy tale, no, there's no breadcrumb trail to lead you back, but it's just as well. And you can close the book and curse the turn it took, and tell the true story of how you fell. That's a better one to tell. That's a better one to tell.
Thank you.
Lisa Loeb, everybody. Album is called No Fairy Tale, available on Amazon. You know what to do. That sounded amazing. And
thank you.
It's always so nice. We get so many great acts coming in here, and it's funny and nice when when somebody like Lisa Loeb, who you look at and you see the glasses and you see the cute little face and you go, oh, that's just so much popcorn. And then you see her pick up her guitar and hit it out of the ballpark.
I love that.
It feels
beautiful.
Great.
Thank you.
Yeah.
And I love popcorn.
But you know what I'm talking about.
I know.
Your package is so tailored. It almost seems like you can be overlooked, like there's not as much substance there because of
right.
what you look like
and
or how you come across. I'm sure you remember.
Oh,
run
yeah.
into that.
In the 90s, actually, I wrote the song The 90s about the 90s with Chad, and it was about that time period. And in one line I wrote, I'm the angel and she's the demon. It's like if you're not, you know, crazy or something, then
like L7.
Yeah, you get
right
overlooked. It's or you don't get overlooked, but it's like you have to prove that you're not.
Yeah, perfect. There's something.
It's like if you can have a conversation with a human. I remember going into record labels, like when I was signed to a big major label. Now I'm on a smaller label because I had been putting out records on my own with distributors, trying to do it on my own because I like being independent. But I went back with a small label called Savoy Records. But anyway, before when I was on the huge conglomerates, like the huge ones, I remember going into these meetings where you were just. It was the strangest thing to feel like you were not going to be heard because you were actually making sentences
yeah.
and you were having marketing meeting conversations.
Yeah.
And that was like not impressive to them. That was kind of like a bad thing.
Well,
you needed to walk, like barely walk in the office, crawling with your gun or I don't even know it.
What it is artists aren't supposed to be sane.
Right.
And I suffer from the same thing as a comedian, where I'm just a regular person, but I'm a comedian, but I'm less funny and less artistic because I'm normal, or at least perceived
right,
that
right,
way.
Right.
So you're normal. So yeah. How artistic can you be if you're not cutting yourself?
Exactly. I did actually cut myself yesterday.
Oh, okay.
Here, but well, that was an accident.
Oh.
It's a paper cut and a
finger. I'm talking about inner thigh,
I know.
Crying,
yeah, this is more like I opened the bar sink to get some. A paper bag from under the
yeah,
sink.
No, that's not rock and roll.
Open. Not yeah. rock
that's
and roll
not
at all.
Edgy.
She
that's
did it just
edgy.
To feel.
Yeah.
And she wanted she wanted to be the one who inflicted the pain on herself for a change.
Right.
Yeah, I found a Crayola Band-Aid.
And that was Lisa Loeb back in 2013, making her triumphant return to the Crayola show. Now, she returned again. In a way, we played a clip from her. They did a live event a couple years ago at Mark Garagus's restaurant where Lisa Loeb played, and we had a drunken lady join her on stage. And
trying to help her along. That was it's one of the most annoying things about like old Loveline stuff, where they have Destiny's Child and they're singing a cappella "Say My Name," but then there's a caller on the line who wants to sing along with them, and it's like, just mute her line, mute the caller's line. What are you doing? This is just teenage Destiny's Child singing "Say My Name" on Loveline a cappella for the boys, and you're letting some caller chime in, and it ruins everything. But yeah, that clip will be played. It has been requested, and we will be featuring that on a future Krull Classics. The blunder of the audience member trying to join Lisa's rendition of her song.
Yeah, I think it's safe to say that whenever Lisa Loeb is involved at all with the show, it's always incredible stuff. So,
and whenever Lisa Loeb's performing on stage, you don't need to help her harmonize. Just enjoy.
Just enjoy. This next clip, this is from 2017. We do a little Q&As, and Adam talks about a little-known movie called Billy Jack.
The full breakdown, it is crazy. A caller from Australia calls in, brings it up, and they go off on it for about 18 minutes.
And then Corinne Fisher and Christina Hutchinson joined them. They are the host.
Guys We Effed Podcast.
That's right.
They had a book out promoting the time. Adam gets along with them great. They're really good guests. I'd love to hear them back on the show. Great episode.
Here we go.
All right, let's see. Our guests are here. Let's do
we have another
more.
Call from Australia, by the way.
What?
Two calls from Australia.
Wow, this one's Tad from Sydney. Tad?
Hey, how are you?
Good, man. What's going on?
Good. I'm an American guy, but I live in Sydney, Australia. It's weird that there's two of us calling right in a row.
Mm-hmm. No. Come on, Brian. What's going on, Big Tad?
Hello? I'm here?
Yeah.
I'm not Big Tad. That is hilarious. I know the stories about Big Tad.
He didn't flee to Australia.
Oh, funny. Man. One of those Vegas trips are me and Big Tad and T-Chance Thrasher, his brother, driving to Vegas in a rented van.
Best.
That was awesome.
A can full of clams.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
I'm familiar with the story. I love it. It's Tad, awful, and
we,
I love it.
Did we exchange Tad for the last caller's wife? Is there an exchange program going
yeah.
on?
Oh,
what are you doing over there, Tad?
What are you doing in Australia?
I moved here about 10 years ago. I did a little bit of building work, and I'm basically a landscaper property manager at the moment. So, yeah, kind of a glorified handyman type
Have
of thing.
Have we spoken to you in the past?
I think so. It's been a long time, but yes.
Something sounds familiar about Australian, something about landscaping mm-hmm. in Australia. But anyway, do you have a question, a comment?
I did have a comment. I was just thinking I'm about a day behind when I listened to the podcast, and I was just listening to probably 2 days ago now when Paul Bryan was talking about Billy Bob yeah. from Varsity Blues.
Rest in peace.
Yeah.
And I just thought it was funny that Jimmy Kimmel's son is named William Jonathan, which, just like William Robert, can be broken down to Billy Jack.
Billy Jack.
And I love that.
Billy yeah. Jack Kimmel.
Yeah, that's
I
good.
Love it.
BJ Kimmel.
Like BJs.
Yeah.
I don't know if that ever came up, but I love it. Billy Jack. He's got Billy Jack. That's hilarious.
I know. I make fun of people who don't know what they're naming their kid, and then yeah. Kimmel pointed out to me that Sonny's middle name is Richard, which makes him Sonny Dick,
yeah.
which is yeah, something yeah. I did not anticipate factor in either.
And he may have made the same mistake, but in a good way, because Billy Jack is an epic name.
Yeah, happy accident.
Pretty good.
Billy Jack. You guys, if you want to do yourselves a favor and you want a big, thick, heaping slab of the 70s, just watch Billy Jack. That movie, like, you know, you want to know what 1989 was like? Watch a Spuds McKenzie commercial and know exactly what the color palette was,
yep.
exactly what the music was,
yep,
exactly
the costumery.
What women's hair,
yes.
bikinis, everything. Everything is of the moment. You watch Billy Jack, you will know exactly what 1973 felt like in this country. It was a bunch of everyone pretending to be Indian. We were still enamored with, like, Kung Fu and any kind of martial arts.
Exotic.
We'd have conversations like, do you think Bruce Lee could beat Muhammad? Oh, of course. What if Muhammad Ali had a bazooka? Bruce would just Bruce would kick him in the head with the bazooka.
Yeah.
What if there were George Foreman and Muhammad Ali? Do you think he could beat Tom Laughlin? Because he knows karate. No, he couldn't. There was something. It was magical about it. Yeah. Yeah, just it was insane.
Well, let me just tell you, you're right. You're absolutely right. It's hilarious. If you look up IMDb, there's just one sentence quickly. The opening sentence for Billy Jack, 1971, ex-Green Beret, Hapkido expert saves wild horses from being slaughtered for dog food and helps protect a desert freedom school for runaway.
What? The greatest sentence I've ever heard.
And his
elevator pitch.
Think of everything you love.
His girlfriend, Billy Jack's girlfriend, may have been more depressed than my mother in the early 70s.
That's saying something,
she was the most depressed character ever. Gary, you got to find a clip of Billy Jack's super downtrodden but age-appropriate girlfriend explaining to him, even though she was raped by the side of the river by a guy
I think his name was Bernard, but they called him Bernard, or they did that weird thing where they hit the wrong syllable or something, but I still think his name was Bernard. He drove a Corvette, big block. He raped her by the side of the river. She had to give a she had to have a discussion with Billy about, doesn't matter how many Bernards you beat up, how many sheriffs you
beat
up, how many
Bernard.
The white man's always going to win. Wow. You know what I mean? Like the blue-eyed devil.
It's quite a metaphor.
It was a lot of, and also it was a lot of scenes of like small town Montana. The Indian kids who were at the free range hippie school up on the hill decide to come down into town and get soft swirl ice cream for everybody. And the nine Indian kids would pour into the ice cream parlor and there'd be the guy who was sitting behind the counter wiping, always wiping a glass. And he's like, what are you doing here? And they're like, we'd like to order some ice cream. You know, you're not welcome. You know, your kind isn't welcome. And it's like,
as I was understood.
It's 1971. They're trying to, by the way, the place is empty. You think you'd like to move a little property? Product, right? Yeah. Like, how about this?
It's going to go bad.
Yeah, I'll make you up a Sunday in the back, but I'll have a snot rocket in it. Yeah. But I'll get your money first. I'll get the wampum first. But he's like, you get out of here. And at some point, find the Indian scene, Carrie. Find Billy Jack.
Forget about the girlfriend.
Indians in the ice cream. You can find the girlfriend giving Billy a super depressing speech, which is anything that came out of her mouth. Or they go, the Indian kids go on a field trip, they go into town, they go into the ice cream parlor, and they decide to get some ice cream, and they, oh man, hijinks ensue.
I guess.
This was the 70s. It's like the most depressing time ever.
This movie sounds awful.
Oh my God. And then Tom Laughlin was one of these guys, it was like, Michael Chiklis, at a certain point when he was at the height of his powers with the commish, he thought he was the commish.
Yeah. Yes.
Like, he was a roly-poly short guy, but he thought he was a badass. It was like a crazy thing. Tom Laughlin, he started to think he was just some Hapkido expert, Green Beret. Oh, it could just beat everyone up. They made Billy Jack. They made the trial of Billy Jack. They made Billy Jack goes to Washington. All right, let's see what happens when the hippie kids come on into the ice cream parlor. They go down to town. They're going to get some ice cream. Let's just see how they're treated.
Could we have some ice cream, please?
Long look.
Sizing them up.
Long look. Walks back behind the counter.
Ignores them. Look, we'd like to buy some ice cream cones, please.
Sorry, I'm all out of cones.
You just served the kids ahead of us.
Look, I told you I'm all out of cones.
Not ice cream cones. Oh, here comes the townies. Oh,
she reaches over.
She grabs the cones.
A novelty-sized box.
She knew where they were.
Right next door.
You're a smart little punk, aren't you?
Hey, hold it. Come on.
That's Bernard. Or Bernard.
Sorry for all this violence. It's a simple problem, really. Harry, look, I know you worked hard to own your own store, and you feel you should have a right to serve wherever you want to, right?
He's going to serve white kids, basically, is what his deal is.
A little Miss Up Yours. There's one
Indian
kid.
She
wants you to serve a non-white friends.
Or a little Miss Up Yours?
Yeah, non-white friends. That doesn't sound like an insurmountable problem. Hey, Dinosaur, bring me some of that
this
flour over there.
He's Dinosaur.
Yeah. Bernard's going to straighten this whole mix out. He's got the flour.
Oh, no.
Simple solution.
Good solution.
Make Miss Up Yours, non-white friends, white.
He dumps flour on her face.
You're right.
Took the Indian kid.
What's the matter, boy? You can let the women do your fighting.
I think the Indian kid could take it pretty easily.
You know, I'm always suspicious of you pacifists.
Give him a burn on his forearm.
It's just a fancy way of covering up.
Rub him.
Yep. Twist.
Please, this won't accomplish anything. We'll just leave.
Oh no! Our good deed's not done. As for the little one here,
it's gonna go.
I
dumped flour on the little Indian girl.
Bernard.
It's unclear. Watch out though, because Billy's on his way. He's dumping flour on everybody.
He's turning them all white.
There now. Everybody is white.
See? You see?
My mom is watching this movie going, you see?
Oh, no. Uh-oh. Here comes Billy.
Here comes trouble.
Here comes Billy Jack.
Here comes William Jonathan.
Billy Jack. He pulled up in his Jeep. It's awesome.
It's a swell hat.
Before you try anything, you're in our territory now. With a sheriff nearby.
Ice cream parlor?
The poor guy's right. Still on all fours.
You go back to the Fuddruckers where you belong.
At the school.
This is great. All right, now find me Billy's girlfriend, the most depressing woman.
We're going to miss the
episode. Please tell me there's vengeance.
Now look at the sheriff.
No. Oh, wait. Let him give a speech. He's disgusted.
Taking his hat off.
Hat's coming off.
Shoes are coming off soon, by the way. When the shoes come off, it's ass-kicking time. All right, listen.
Billy. It's Bernard. Introspective.
Bernard. What's he calling, Bernard or Bernard?
I sound like Bernard.
I want you to know that I try.
Ooh, slow walk.
Gene and the kids at the school tell me that I'm supposed to control my violent temper.
Slow walk.
And be passive and nonviolent like they are.
Tries.
You wouldn't like me when I'm angry.
I try. I really try.
I really try.
So when I see this girl of such a beautiful spirit, so degraded.
White chick with the flower on her.
And when I see this boy, I love.
They know he knows Kempo.
Crawled out by this big ape here.
He's talking about dinosaur.
Yeah, dinosaur.
He's a big boy.
I think he goes berserk.
And this little girl, who is so special to us that we call her God's little gift of sunshine.
Oh,
break his nose.
And I think of the number of years she's going to have to carry.
This is my entire childhood, by the way. My mom gave me this speech like 28 times in front of the refrigerator. It was empty.
This idiotic moment of yours, I just go.
Here we go.
Oh, crunch up.
Kick in the face. Where do the boots come off? The boots through the glass
window.
Yep.
That's not breakaway glass.
No.
I thought he's dead.
All right. Just find me the girlfriend.
And they don't. Their expression never changes.
They never change.
Is the girlfriend seen the girlfriend talking to another chick?
The girlfriend is talking to Billy, and she looks like she's 10 years older than Billy. It's back when movies used to. Not go.
Not care about
it. They didn't care about it.
We think we may have it. Why don't you give some love and we'll
all
come
right.
back.
I will say this, too.
That was awesome.
Damn.
There used to be an easy move. There was a super move that you could do in any movie back in the day, which is when Wimpy Guy had his girlfriend sort of abused by the gorilla.
Yeah.
All you had to do is take a half step toward the gorilla guy, he'd punch you in the gut, you'd keel over, and then we could check two boxes, which is, you tried, and we kind of got you out of this. Because we can't have you stand around and watch her being insulted the whole time. That makes you a douchey dude and a puss and a yellow and all that kind of stuff. We can't have you beat up the gorilla. You're too diminutive. You'll take one step. He'll do the one shot to the stomach. Yep. You'll do the,
you'll be on all fours.
And you'll just be on the ground. Yeah. And then you can stay there till we're done with this scene.
That's good.
They did that in every single movie.
Yeah, that was a good way to dispense of the guy that was.
And there's almost no choreography involved with that. Like, we don't need to get the stunt coordinator. And you just take a step from under the camera lens. I'll do the shot.
You'll
just keel over. That'll be that. Easy punch to fake. You're out of the scene. You tried. No harm, no disgrace. We can get on with our gorilla bullying. Yes?
You're right.
Dinosaur.
Every single time. Bernard?
Dino.
Bernard. All right, let me just see the most depressing woman in the world, which is Billy Joel. Chris Brinkley.
So much better.
All right. Yeah?
We're still looking for it. We now don't think we have it. We're trying to figure it out here.
Can you just reenact?
Did you like the theme song, by the way?
Go ahead and cheat your neighbor. Go ahead and cheat a friend. Do it in the neighbor. Yeah, it was a big hit.
What?
The song.
Yeah, I first heard it on Freedom Rock.
Billy, this is a big hit.
Yeah.
A jazz
flute. I was going to say.
just the old lady with the stringy blonde hair talking to Billy, Gary. You know this one, right?
Not so far.
Oh, you're gonna know it.
Children to a story that was written long ago.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Starting to get you?
Yes.
The mountain and the valley folk below.
Voice of an angel.
On the mountain was a treasure buried.
I wouldn't exactly categorize this as a badass song for Billy Jack.
Wait for it.
Wait till it kicks in.
They have it for their very own.
Here we go.
Go ahead and hit your neighbor.
You can justify it in the end. There won't be any trumpets blowing come the judgment day on the bloody morning after. One tin soldier rides away. Probably nominated for an Oscar.
Wow.
All right, pot it down.
Please.
All right, Gary, can't find that? Now, how about Chick getting raped by the river? Come on now.
Yeah, type that in your Google.
I know, that's all.
When you put in Billie Jean rape, there's this scene that comes up that comes up several different times.
But put in Billie Jack.
Sorry, Billie Jack rape. That's what we have in. But it's Dolores Taylor talking to another female actress.
All right, well, let's just talk to her. We'll just see. Yeah, we'll just see the most depressing woman in the world having the biggest bum out session ever. This certainly checks that. This is my mom, everybody.
Billy kills him.
For raping her by the river.
You mustn't tell Billy, Cindy.
Why not?
Because he will kill him.
Damn your pacifism! I am not gonna let that sick animal get away with this!
He has gotten away with it.
Is that Billy Jack's mom?
It's his girlfriend.
Even if Billy kills him, kills them all. It wouldn't change what's happened here today.
Still raped by the river.
It wouldn't take away any of the horror.
I bet Weinstein's like, why weren't more women stoic like this one?
It'll just destroy a lot of innocent kids. Can't you understand that?
Now everyone's just crying by the river.
My nonviolence. The kids. That's all I have left now.
She's the biggest bummer on the planet. That's like growing up with my mom.
Oh, boy.
She got raped by the river. She can't tell her old man because she's going to kill him.
Me of this chance. If I can't really turn the other cheek, when I can help the kids the most.
All right. She wants to help the kids.
Did you ever yell, damn your pacifism, at your mom?
Yeah, gritted teeth.
Through the door. Corinne Fisher is coming in. Christina Hutchinson's coming in. The podcast, Guys We Fucked, man. The anti-slut shaming podcast. We'll talk to them right after this. Corinne Fisher's here. Christina Hutchinson is here. The pod, Guys We Fucked, the anti-slut shaming podcast. And now the book, Fucked. There's a few books out there with the fuck that being sexually explorative and confident in the world that's screwed. Available now on Amazon. And bookmark us, man, and show a little love. How's it going, ladies?
Hi. Good. How you doing?
I'm doing well. So let's talk perfect timing for this subject, Ryan.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So I feel like there's strength in numbers. Like somebody comes out, then everyone comes out, then everyone feels like I mean, it's a wiring. It's a human wiring. If you got 100 people in the room and you went, who has genital herpes, and nobody raised their hand,
you got to wait for the one.
No one raised their hand. Yeah. Five people with their hand up. Yeah. The next five are super super easy after that. So what is the climate we're in, and what should everyone do? I got an 11-year-old girl. What should I tell her, and when?
I think the first thing is just that she shouldn't, if anything ever happens to her, that she shouldn't feel ashamed to speak up about it. And also to tell someone in the moment, no, that's, you can't touch my body, you can't talk to me in that way, without being afraid of like losing a position. Like if you're going to lose a job because of that, I think it's like, who cares about that job anyway? It's more important to love yourself and feel that you have ownership over your own body.
You know, as from doing Loveline for a million years, I realize, and it's a two-way street, because there's a male, I don't mean a male exploit, sexploitation version of this, mm-hmm. but if your parents diminish you, if your parents make you feel like you're just unloved, unnecessary, un everything,
no value. Well, yeah.
It makes it real easy to turn you into a victim. Later on, you don't feel like you have any currency or any self-worth or any whatever. Like what I'm saying is like my parents made me feel that way, and I wasn't sexually abused, but I was abused. Like they
emotionally.
Go, hey, go climb in that hole and start digging ditches. And I'd be like, it could cave in. Yeah, go ahead anyway. Like you do things that you would never do, that people with self-esteem would never do.
Yep.
And you don't
know it's weird at the time, probably, because that's your reality.
As I think about my daughter, I don't think I need to have a conversation with her. I think as long as I raise her like we're raising her, I don't think there's anything she needs to know. She will react. If somebody tried to do something to her, she'd punch them.
Is sexuality ever a part of the conversation at home in general, or is it just not talked
about?
There's
no conversations at home.
Yeah, just in general. There's no talking to the children.
I tell the nanny.
You want to think, though, that when it happens to you, you can immediately recognize, this ain't right. I'm going to tell my parents. I'm going to tell a teacher. I'm going to tell somebody near me that's an adult that I can trust. But the shock, you kind of go numb, and you're like, wait, this isn't happening. Is this happening? No, it's not. And then you're confused. I think that people need to start talking about sexual assault with their kids at an age that the parent feels it's appropriate, because as long as you know it's a thing that happens, when it does happen, instead of being shocked right away, which you're still going to be, you're going to go, I had a conversation about this, and this is what I can do, because you feel so out of control in that moment. And that's why one of the things we've learned from doing this podcast for 4 years is I feel like 85% of the population has been raped or molested. I cannot believe how common this is. I had no idea. And then when it came out in the media and all these people in Hollywood started getting outed, I'm like, finally, other people are going to be sick of hearing about this as much as we are. And then maybe we can do something about it, or at the very least build awareness.
So was there an experience in your own life that brought this on? I mean,
it's honestly
are you in the
emails.
15%?
We are in the 15%, and we feel, and that's so crappy. We feel lucky that we have not been raped. How weird is that?
I had an instance where I've been
weird.
I turned this into a bit because I thought it was so funny, but now I'm like, that's dark. I'm like, have you ever been sexually molested or molested by somebody and then you didn't realize it until the next day and you're like, God damn it.
It's a closing.
Good. And then I just walk off stage and don't explain the rest. I was in a doctor's office. I had to pick a doctor to get blood work for a physical, and the guy gave me a breast exam, and I was like, that's weird. And I was maybe 23 at the time, and I was like, that's so, and he took his time, and I was like, that's probably not.
Lit a candle.
He's too thorough.
Yeah.
The fact that he was there to refill the vending machine should have been what they call a tell.
He had a jacket, a white jacket on. But then I left the doctor's office, and I was like, wait a second. I was going to get, oh man. And I'm like, it didn't even dawn on me until after, because I'm like, he's a doctor. A lot
you
of times,
have your guard down more than at a doctor's right. office.
Well, and
a
very
lot,
vulnerable. Yeah, and a lot of times when sexual assault happens, it's a person that is in a position of trust or power over the other person. That's a huge part of it. So you're not going to assume right away that he's a predator. Mm. You're going to assume, I guess, this is what happens when you go to get blood work, and then you Google it, and you're like, hey, Siri, is this normal? And Siri's like, girl, you got molested.
There should be sassy black Siri, right?
Girl.
I guess.
Yes.
But that's something we've talked about on the show, too. And I think it's just sort of in our DNA that instead of being sort of realizing in the moment and being infuriated and outraged, we most of the time go, how do we de-escalate this? How do we get out of this? And go, I guess that's normal. I got to go. Mm-hmm. Instead of what the fuck are you doing?
And it's embarrassing.
Yeah, very.
It is embarrassing to have it happen to you because you feel like an idiot. How did I not see this coming? Mm-hmm. Why didn't I say anything right away? And I mean, I just had a guy, doctor, feel up my boob when he shouldn't have. It was groping, but the shit we read every day is so dark, and it happens so often that I really think parents should have a talk with their kids about it.
So we just got an text here or message from Gary that said John Lasseter's got some trouble now.
Oy. Yeah.
Which now it's officially, if he's in, you know, next one, Weird Al, like everyone's on. It's open to everybody. There's no bigger chasm than Weinstein and John Lasser. Like, we all, if you have a penis, you land in between those two dudes.
I have a question for you. Are you, I feel like men are very like, oh shit, what's going to happen? Is something going to come out? That's not what I want out of this whole situation. I just want everybody to have an awareness
that
it happens.
Yeah, just be aware.
But I'm curious, what do you think? Are you, well, like, someone.
Well, you know, it's interesting because you think, all right, I don't think Al Franken was walking around a week ago worried about his checkered past or the highway that was littered with victims. I don't think Al Franken was walking around. Now, Kevin Spacey could have been walking around, or maybe maybe Oliver Stone is walking around thinking, what was that?
Shit.
You know, and maybe if you're Kevin, Spacey or Oliver Stone or Jeremy Piven or something, and it's a month ago, and someone goes, "Hey, did you see the news feed?" There's maybe a party that goes like, "Whatever."
Call a lawyer.
So just like being a male, being in Hollywood, you know, being on the Man Show, and blah blah blah. It kind of crosses my mind like once in a while, like what could I? But I have no fear of doing anything to anybody. On the other hand, if Al Franken is the yardstick that we have to clear, if that's the hurdle to clear, then every guy can do at least what Al Franken did. Like, what you can, you know, I'm not trying to apologize for the guy, but if the bar's pretty low, I mean, many, many years of interacting and being around women, yeah, I'd say most guys could get to an Al Franken level pretty quickly, and everyone, if that's the yardstick that we're measuring this by, then I don't know any guys that wouldn't make it into this category.
Right. And really? I don't disagree with that. And I think it's, so that's why like awareness is key. It's just like, we just need to, as a society, stop touching women. We don't want to be touched.
Just don't touch us.
Stop
when
commenting
we
on our bodies all the time. Just enough. Just enough is enough. Like, being a woman really is walking down the street and comment about your body, comment about your outfit. Someone brushes up against you every day. Like, elbowing dicks out of my way is part of my daily subway commute. And it doesn't traumatize me, but maybe it's more alarming that it doesn't bother me anymore.
It's totally counterintuitive to me to try to grope or cop a feel or take a shower. Like, I would do it if I thought it got me closer to the goal line, but I don't feel or anything. Like, I don't.
A movie.
It's like when people talk to me about eating poi or Vegemite or how much they love chicken liver in their omelet, I'm just like, it doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense to me.
You never had the desire to grope a lady.
I don't, because I don't feel like it gets me. Like, feeling someone's ass cheek outside of their jeans. If you blindfolded me and you said, "Dawson, come in here in a pair of Levi's," and then you told Gina to turn around and put on a pair of Levi's, and I got one quick grope.
That wouldn't give you an erection.
Will Adam touch it?
I wouldn't feel the difference.
Right, but the things that are coming forward, a lot of it is a power thing, because someone like Louie or Kevin, you could have hired a sex worker to gladly pretend you're stand in front of the hotel room, jerk off. She'll take your money. It'll be consensual. No one will say shit, because that's a healthy outlet.
But that's the point. That's the point. It's not supposed to go down gladly and consensually.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that's what they like about it.
That's where the perv part comes in, which is, if you pay somebody, then now no longer, that's not a bank heist anymore. I want the danger of the bank heist.
Yeah, it's just a boring transaction.
Yeah, it's just a boring transaction. But for the regular guys who just want to get off, that doesn't make sense to us.
Right.
Like, the cop a feel in the subway doesn't make sense. That's potential downside. Getting arrested or slapped or something with felt someone's boob outside of the sweater.
It was all worth it.
I've always wondered that too, like all this stuff that's happening. I mean, we're women, so we hear about it from forever. But doing the podcast, we hear about instances big and small. And I'm always like, what the fuck? Why? Like, Corinne's had so many guys rub their hard dicks against her in the subway. And I'm like, what are you? Just jerk off. Go to a Starbucks, lock the bathroom, jerk off.
Done and
done. How is that not that That shouldn't be that hard.
But you know,
I would never have guessed that that many guys with boners were in subways rubbing it against you.
A lot of ass grabbing too.
A lot of ass grabbing.
I've seen her get her ass grabbed one Halloween, and I was like, as young as 12, which is like, I mean, I just slapped him, but you know, you could get to him early.
Is the deal I can grab an ass in the subway and I can get away with it?
The anonymity.
Well, it depends. I mean, with the 12-year-old, it was definitely look cool in front of my friends, which is why I chased him and slapped him. I mean, not hard, but just I wanted to embarrass him, to show him this isn't cool. You're going to look like an asshole in front of your friends, not like the cool guy. It's not cool to do that. I wanted them to see it's not cool to do that. I mean, I'm not hitting grown men. I knew I could take the 12-year-old.
Yeah.
So, but I mean, that's the part of like why people are always touching women, because like, yeah, we're not going to physically fight you. Most times we can't. I'm going to lose that battle. But has your behavior towards women like changed since you're been married or had a daughter? Or
nah, I'm still a dick.
Same indifference.
How are you a dick though?
My thing is emotional
abuse.
I don't neglect.
That's it.
I don't
at the problem.
I don't know. I've never really. I got a like almost no pulse.
Haranguing over keys. And, yeah.
Well, I understand that. I also don't mostly have a pulse.
It's true.
So I don't really like. First off, I just assume. So my sort of posture in life is nobody's interested in you sexually.
So many men think that. I didn't know men thought that.
I'm rich, and I still think, and I have sports cars and stuff, and I still
and the girls are like, nah.
Assume nobody has any interest in you physically.
Why?
It's just part of my upbringing. It's just how I grew up.
Is that how you feel? You weren't hot?
Yes, of course.
Okay, this is the problem then. Men, and it's not you guys, you're not sexual predators, but men hate themselves more than I realized.
Oh, yeah. Most guys just assume nobody would want to be with them physically or intimately. And if you did, it'd be sort of an annoyance at best,
tolerate
and at worst,
it.
They tolerate it, and they have no interest. And I have no, I don't know, Gina, you've traveled with me. We
multiple
go through
times.
Life and stuff yeah. together. We go to abroad, and we go to hotels, yep. and we go back to, out to eat and go to whatever.
I can't get him to look at me.
No, I just mean,
my titties in your face. Here's like, just open your eyes.
No, my thing is this. I am insanely pragmatic about everything. And if there is some end game, like if there is some Gina and I are traveling and we're going to get together and that's something that I'm really thinking about, then I will put some effort into that. I won't put some effort into I'll kind of brush up against her. We'll
see
eat.
You won't half-ass.
We'll have a knowing glance and then you'll go back to your room and I'm going to go beat off in the shower. Like I don't want to put any effort into that. This is a calorie burner.
Right. Well, but I think, too, though, when you start from a place, I feel like every guy thinks this because I've heard it so often lately. If you don't like yourself and then a woman, you're talking to a woman and you want to fuck her, but then you also hate her for stooping so low that she would even want to look at you.
Wow.
I mean, that's not going to work out well.
Wow. That's the key.
That's complicated.
You know, it's an interesting thing. I think women, if seen through the eyes, the prism of being a woman, you think that Brian and I's sort of default setting of nobody's interested in you, why would they be, keep walking, is not liking ourselves. But it's really not.
It's different.
And that doesn't make you...
No, because we're not as invested in our sexuality.
Oh.
Or we're not as invested in being attractive. Because we're guys, we have a different set of criteria.
You can succeed even if you're not attractive.
I own a bunch of warehouses and cars, thus I'm attractive to me.
Brian has so many buttons down.
And you're funny. Like, I think there's a lot more value. Like, a funny man, like, a lot more value than, like, people aren't trying to fuck us when we kill stand-up sets.
We're not slaying any dick after shows. If anything, it's like, ugh. You know, like, why?
Right.
Too much trouble.
So
exactly.
I think most guys have a, like, again, just like their default setting is nobody's interested in you, and why would they be? That's me. That's generally how I go through life. Now, when people are or have been interested, I'm not confused by it.
Okay, that's
I just
good.
Understand, like, when I used to be on MTV, I'd like, oh, that chick's talking to me at the bar because I'm on MTV at the bar we're in, and that's what you're supposed to do when people are on TV. You're supposed to go talk to them. But it's one of these things, too, that you don't have to think about unless, you know, maybe you're Harvey Weinstein or whomever. we get to just take our sexuality and sort of just put it in the rearview mirror. Like, who cares? Get up, go to work,
play sports,
play sports, watch TV. Yeah. Like, it's not even a part. It's not even a part of anything.
Do you ever think? How often does it occur to you, or how often are you reminded that you're a man?
Huh.
Whenever I sit down to pee.
Do you think about it? Are you just like, oh, I'm just holding my wiener and peeing? Like, do you think?
I don't think. See, there's certain things where you go, all right, you're male, you're heterosexual, you're white, you're rich. These things have privileges and they come with baggage and they come with a certain societal whatever. I never think about anything ever. All I do is get up, go to work, and go home.
That sounds amazing, and I'm so jealous of
you. You should be.
Because for many reasons, but one of them, I feel like women are one thing that is so fucking annoying. All these little tiny things, the word microaggression used to make me roll my eyes. I'm like, get out of here with this. But and then I kind of understood what it meant more. So like when I'm going to the grocery store and some guy goes to me, I'm like, oh, Christ, shut the fuck up. Can I just go to the goddamn grocery store? And throughout your day or throughout your life, all these little tiny things happen. And what they do is they're constantly reminding you of, like, I'm a woman. You're a woman. Because when someone is talking to you like that, it feels disgusting. Yeah. Even if it's just mildly annoying, you also feel gross.
I have a question about that because I've been thinking about this lately. There's, obviously, to me anyway,
sweetie.
What's
the guy's finish?
Guys are talking.
Whoa.
Very common here. Very hurtful. No, you know, somebody says something obviously fucked up to you on the street. Yeah. It's obvious and it's hurtful. It's gross. But I'll be walking down the street and if someone's like, hey, you look beautiful, my instinct is, hey, thanks, man. And I keep walking. And that doesn't bother me at all.
And okay, it's good. It's okay that it doesn't bother me. Does it make you feel better? Do you, like, if you don't get that catcall, do you feel like, oh my God, maybe my outfit isn't on point today?
No, don't think about it at all.
But I think it's totally healthy.
Yeah. I wonder about that because I used to live in New York and people are very vocal about everything.
Yes. They'll shit on the subway, see right across from me.
So much shit on the subway.
Yeah.
Don't ever take the empty car.
Yes, never.
That's for a reason.
But for me, I think just where you know, anecdotally, what I've seen and put up with and whatever, welcomed everything. There's a clear line when I'm walking down the street. And if someone says that horrible, oh, you'd be prettier if you smile. Well, you'd be more hurt if I kicked you in the dick.
But
if someone's just like, hey, you look beautiful. Oh, cool. Thanks. And I think that's fine.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's happened to me. It's just easier, more convenient, and I don't give a shit. Sometimes the lines are funny. I'm like, fucking idiot. And I keep going. I'm not bothered by it, but it's just all the time. I still don't love it, though. I mean, it's like, you know, you're not shouting things. You know, people say good morning to me a lot. And I'm like, I didn't see you say good morning to any of the other men walking down the street. Because if we're all going to say good morning, great. That's a place I'd love to live. That's very nice
that's
and friendly.
I get the good morning shamed because I'm so unrefined. All I got in me chambered is, hi. When I see people going down the street, I go, hey, and they go, good morning.
Good morning.
And I feel like I'm being corrected. Like, you're right. It's 9 a.m.
I'm sorry.
Like,
sorry. I would take a hey. Yeah.
I don't burn calories on the looking good or smile or get
you
some
don't
fries
know that.
With that.
That's how you see yourself.
I don't think there's anything in it for me.
Yeah. Oh, I see.
She's not going to stop and ask for your number.
I don't grope on the subway.
What a hero.
I don't do catcalls because I don't think there's any upside.
If there was an upside.
Well, if you thought hot babes were going to fuck you, if you called things, would you start catcalling?
If I wanted to get laid and I thought it would work, I would do it.
Yeah, and that's the thing, it like doesn't work. But then
science has bore that out. Yeah.
but for every like 100 times that someone catcalls and it doesn't work, then it does for one time work and then you're like, "Oh no, this just set us back so many years."
The guy's
years.
Like, "I'm never giving up."
Anytime I see it happen in New York and it works, I'm like, "No! Don't."
Well,
let that
I've
work.
Never seen a documented case where it worked, and I've never seen a documented case where you groped somebody on the subway or at a party or outside their whatever in a car. Like, it just doesn't work. So if it doesn't work, it's not effective. I'm not interested in
but
it still
works in Harlem, I gotta say.
If you go to Gothamist, which is like my favorite blog about New York City shit, it's every at least twice a week. It's like, ugh, so and so took his dick out on the six.
Right.
I think your point is you've never seen it happen and have a happy ending, like the girl's into it.
Yeah,
not
happy seen ending.
It. Because they don't want them to be into it, I guess.
Right.
Again, like I just feel like your job is to fool chicks into wanting to have sex with you.
As
you
a
don't
man.
Gotta fool us.
That's I know, but that's where we grow. We have the mindset. I'll speak for Brian on this one. We feel like our default setting is who would want to fuck us.
100% right.
Your default setting is why should I fuck you? Okay. And our job is to give you some incentive to try to think this would be a good idea to do continually, no, by the way, more than
once. Perpetuity.
So grabbing the boob or pulling the dick out or the catcall, that's not going to get us any closer to you wanting to do this.
Rarely works.
And since you're in charge of this decision, we have to, it's a job application kind of thing. It's not like I grab the dick of the guy I'm sitting across the table when I'm trying to get the job. You know, I'm trying to get the job.
Yeah.
I'm basically trying to convince him that I wear a tie every day.
That's one of the very few times that women in their life are in charge of the situation. And that's kind of annoying. Like, it's, you know, I think that when the ball's in your court, lady, and you're like, wait, what do I do? It's just a mind fuck of society shit.
Well,
and,
you know,
I think the gropers, though, are the people who are frustrated that the women are in control. And because they're in control, they're not making the decision to fuck these people. And so they're like, well, I'm just going to take a feel because I know I'm not going to have sex. Like, you made a decision like, I am going to be funny. I'm going to be rich. Like, these are other things that women like. And then but that's like the positive road that you took.
Well, I'm no hero. I wanted money to buy cars.
Yes, you are.
Mainly. Not so much to get laid, but I'm wondering, I'm going to tease this. I'll tell you what. Yeah, I want you guys to think about this. How many lone gropers and or catcallers are there versus I'm impressing the other guy on the construction site or I'm trying to impress my buddy? Don't shout out anything yet, but I'm curious what you think about the lone wolf catcaller and or groper versus the I'm trying to impress or get a rise out of my buddy.
I'm doing it for people around me.
Right.
Around me, because guys are very much that way. And speaking of guys, how about Vikings? History's So, what do we say? How much of this is lone wolf and how much is just guys trying to impress other guys? I feel like the cat calls is always with another guy
Not to me.
Not to you.
To me, yes. I get the groups. She gets the lone wolf.
Like a weirdo loves me. I'm a weirdo magnet.
And then what about the groper?
People, I mean, those are people, it's usually in crowded situations. So, I mean, you have the protection of other people, but it's not like groups of friends, like the SNL sketch, Guys at the Rock.
You had the 12-year-old kid.
Yes.
You ran him down.
Yeah.
And you whacked him in front of the other kids, right? So that was...
But that's a child.
Right. But I'm saying, it's like, that's a guy trying to show off to his buddies, right?
He's young.
His young adolescent buddies.
Yeah.
So we can agree that most of the gropers are kind of on their own, but the catcallers, by and large, are group.
That makes sense.
It's 50-50 for me.
For me,
the majority
of catcallers. That's surprising to me.
Majority of catcallers are always with another person.
Brian, what about you?
I was going to say 5-1. No, one out of five is the lone wolf, and the other ones are doing it because they're in a group or they will get a rise out of their buddies. That's my punch.
The catcall.
Yeah.
Yeah, and if you're catcalling, I would imagine if you're a dude with a bunch of your dude friends, you don't even care what the response is from the girl as long as you get one.
I work construction sites. I did like residential home improvement remods and stuff like that. Like it wasn't construction sites.
Right.
But once we were doing an earthquake rehab job off in Normandy near Wilshire, and at some point we were on the roof and it's just a bunch of dudes and we're on a roof, like 5-story brick building, and they have a parapit. It's like a 40-inch high wall that goes around so you can kind of hide behind if you don't want to be seen. And somebody realized that they were on a neighboring building, although it seemed pretty far away, there was a woman sunbathing topless. And the word got around through the building pretty quick that if you got onto the roof, you could see over into the neighboring. But it was like staring at a B cup from like 250 feet away.
Hardly worth it.
But we didn't have U-porn back then. So we all got up on the roof of the building, and then one guy who was like a volunteer fireman said, I got binoculars in my truck. And we're like, you go get those binoculars, and you hustle back. And everyone else, shut up. Don't say a word. And she was laying there. And then one guy named Frazier, who was from New Zealand, thus he was nuts, guy seems feeling her nuts. And where everyone's like hiding behind the parapet, and it's like, wait till Jeff gets back with the binoculars and we can take a turns with the binoculars. And then Frasier stood up and was like, hey, baby, how about giving us a look? And she's like, what? And he'd like towel over and like, had to yell at Frasier.
Every group has a Frasier.
Yeah. Oh, I've done that at parties.
You're the Frasier.
No. I'm the girl gets the binoculars. I'm not the fucking Frasier.
She's stealthy.
And I've seen like a guy from across, like in New York City, the building across the street was getting naked, and these two other girls were getting naked. I'm like, everybody, come on. And it was the best. It was awesome. I love that shit.
Yeah,
it's human nature to want to look. Yeah. I would be up on the roof with you looking at them titties.
I concur.
And that clip, featuring Corinne Fisher, Christina Hutchinson, and Billy Jack, back in 2017. All right, we got one more clip for you guys, but I want to remind everybody, if you're digging this show, subscribe to Corolla Classics, the podcast. Check us out for tomorrow, because we release another episode every Sunday.
And tomorrow we got some good clips. We got Simon Helberg with his only Adam Carolla Show appearance from Big Bang Theory.
Yes.
We got James Baby Doll Dixon and Cousin Sal in studio. Some classic stories. It's always great when you get Baby Doll in as well to confirm some of this. We got Robert Davi's episode, but before he joins them in studio, Adam brought back Terry the Pterodactyl, a classic radio show bit, and some fans really wanted to hear that. We got Jocko Willink making his ACS debut, and some Ken Burns. All coming up tomorrow, Sunday, 11:17, Corolla Classics. Subscribe and enjoy.
Before we get out of here, I want to send you guys off with another Toad the Wet Sprocket clip from 2013. What's up with this one, Gio?
One more song. They play Walk on the Ocean. They got a funny little callback during a brief part of a live read that's been chopped out. But there's a mention about Adam asking the drummer to play some circles or some rings in the background. And Brian chimes in, and it's a great callback to the last clip where Adam had him play his favorite song, Circles, Rings. He can't remember the title. Check it out.
We spotted the ocean, head of the trail. Where are we going? So far away. Somebody told me this is the place where everything's better and everything's safe. Walk on the ocean, step on the stones, the flesh becomes water, wood becomes bone. A half an hour later, packed up our things, said we'd send letters. And all of those little things, we knew we were lying, and smiled just the same. It seemed that I already forgotten we'd care. Walk on the ocean, step on the storms, flesh becomes water, wood becomes bone. Walk on the ocean, step on the storm, flesh becomes water, wood becomes bone. Where the air makes you choke, and people don't know you, trust is a joke. We don't even have pictures, just memories to hold. Grows sweeter each season as we slowly grow.
Wow. Love me some Code the West Rocket.
Thank you.
Randy, play Rings on the drums while I do my Stamps.com spot. There you go.
Oh, this one.
That's right. Stamps.
Oh, circles.
Stamps.com.
And that was Toad the Wet Sprocket playing everyone's favorite song, Walk on the Ocean, a big hit. All right, that'll do it for Corolla Classics. Thank you again for hanging out with us on this lovely Saturday. If you need something to do, please check out No Safe Spaces. It's a great film. Check it out. Bring your family this weekend. Watch it. It's an important film.
I'm in the credits.
Yeah. So me and Gio are in the credits. At least watch it for that.
We're producers.
Yeah. We can't get
executive
for that,
producers.
Right? Yeah. Anyway, please check out No Safe Spaces. Go to nosafespaces.com and find a theater/showing near you and help spread the word because we want that film to shine. All right. We'll see you tomorrow. Till then, my name is Chris Loxamana. That's Superfan Giovanni.
Mahalo.
And get it on.